Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. 6:11. You know, when you walk into work and a fire truck pulls up, the hardworking men and women of the Chicago Fire Department, I have nothing but respect for them. But it's always good if a fire truck pulls up, and you can crank this up, Joe, and the doors are open on the building to let them in.
Oh.
It's always good when you see them get out of the fire truck and kind of mosey. So apparently we had a grease fire for breakfast or something. I don't know.
Is that what that smell was? There was a weird...
I don't know. Fire department's downstairs moseying. You're just moseying in.
Good.
At 6:12, the weekend was odd because you had crazy cold. And then yesterday was supposed to be warmer and it wasn't. But now it's warm.
Yes, 33.
So if you're getting up this morning thinking I'm going to slide all the way to work, maybe I shouldn't even leave. The roads are fine. Might
just
not
wet.
Be so good in your neighborhood, right? But
right.
We're fine.
They weren't even bad in the neighborhood.
No.
Really.
No, they weren't for me.
They're
either.
In good
little
shape.
A little
sloppy right now.
And nobody's running into each other, are they, Mary?
Not today.
No, yesterday. Last night. That was
bad.
Nasty. 55 and 57. You know, that freezing rain. A lot of college kids were going back to school yesterday.
Yeah.
So I hope they all made it safely.
The pictures of that accident up near Plainfield was horrible. Because people were trying to stop. And, of course, your brakes lock and boom.
In.
Yeah.
And it's going to be warm all week?
Yes.
Woohoo!
Got a decent forecast coming up, too, yeah.
Oprah Flat killed it last night at the Golden Globes. We'll talk about that. And the top 6 and 6 is coming up in just a second as well. We got an announcement to make this morning. Are we going to announce it this morning? Where's Sandberg? Sandberg, are we going to announce this morning? Okay.
Nobody else is leaving, are they?
No, it's not right.
Is it my birthday again?
Helping out on the program, and he may well get the job. Who knows? I mean, we find out he's a thief or something. Some bad. We get a major background check, Homeland Security looking into him.
Right, we'll turn our backs.
But Joe Romanoff, famous Russian spy, is here. Is that the last name, Romanoff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is it Romanoff?
No.
Yeah,
what's the last name?
Romanoff.
Oh, that can't be right.
That's not the guy I thought
Joe Romanoff.
Was.
Joe Romanoff. Woo-hoo.
Romanoff, is that the stuff they make with Hamburger Helper? Is that...
You can have it with that if you choose. You know, I don't know. It creates a lot of heartburn. But Joe, nice to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Say hi to your family.
Yo, what's up, fam? How you doing?
No, I don't mean now. I mean later.
Steve, he's busy in there.
He's trying to run the show.
Are they awake?
But I hope everybody had a nice weekend. And again, you're okay to get to work this morning.
Yes.
So get up and go to work. Sorry. At 6:14, Mary, how'd you do this weekend? Everything fine?
I had a great birthday on Friday, and that was fun.
Yeah.
And it was good weekend.
Did you leave your neighborhood?
I did. I went to see that bizarre Shape of Water.
Oh, what is this?
It was good. I almost left after 20 minutes, but I said, nah, you know, I'm going to go through. I'm eating my popcorn.
I paid $15 for the ticket.
I spent 20 bucks.
I got to say no.
I got to say no to that, too.
You know what, though? It was really beautiful. It was weirdly beautiful. I'll say that. With the weird monster, that whole thing was a little odd.
Yeah.
But
well, let's cut to the chase. Is there really a love scene with the monster?
Yes.
Oh, see?
Well, it's in the water.
Oh, come on. Hence the Shape of Water, Steve.
Dave's covering his ears
really
like
haven't watched it yet.
They don't show that.
Well, that's
no.
not a secret. The love scene
they don't
of the
give
monster.
It away.
Brought it up
there is nudity in it, though.
There is?
Well, yeah.
Of the monster?
The monster's naked the whole time.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Well,
flashing the gills.
Hey, you know what I saw this weekend? I forgot I did. Molly's Game. It's crazy.
Oh, my mom saw that. She said it was awesome.
30 minutes longer than it needs to be, but it's great.
I saw Call Me By Your Name.
And?
Didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
I agreed with Dean's assessment perfectly. It was a beautifully shot movie, too long, and it was just a little creepy having a 17-year-old have an affair with a 31-year-old.
That's what I think is going to happen to this movie because of that. Andrea.
Just
that
a weird
kind of people
just
won't
a,
go.
It's just a weird time.
It's uncomfortable.
And I mean, I get the premise. I think it was a beautiful premise, but just maybe a miscast with the actors because the young boy was just so young. He was a young boy, and it was a man in his 30s. So just different.
Yeah. Wrong time, wrong release.
Wrong time, yeah, but beautiful premise.
Dr. Mo's coming up. He will talk about health stuff because, you know, he's a doctor. Ryan Nobles from CNN later. Oh, man, we got some stuff to cover from this weekend. Holy mackerel. Dan Hampton on the Bears coaching search in a weird NFL weekend. And Nancy O'Dell later on what she saw last night at the Golden Globe. 616 Cars, please.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
Item number one on your top six at six is Oprah. Here's a quote. What I know for sure is that speaking your truth is the most powerful tool we all have. Oprah accepted a Lifetime Achievement Award and made it all about empowering women, as the majority of the years of her show were about. She also continued, quote, I'm especially proud and inspired by all the women who have felt strong enough and empowered enough to speak up and share their personal stories. And it was absolutely the moment of the night.
Absolutely. This will be the big story as well, Steve. Her speech just off the charts. They were calling
it
a movement-defining speech. And not only was it powerful, she didn't stumble. She was poised. She had control of that room and just
ended it.
It's almost
like she was Oprah.
Yeah. She just was unbelievable.
Can you imagine if she ever had a talk show?
Right?
Here's the thing, too. The national media folks are panting this morning, going, this is possibly an entree into her presidential run in 2020.
She's not going to run for president.
Can it just be a great speech?
Right, I know.
Does it have to be tied into something? Does there have to be a secret message? Maybe it was just a great speech.
Seth Meyers.
A great speech at the great time.
Joked about that, too.
Next! Rachel Brosnahan grew up in Highland Park. She won the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a TV Comedy or Musical, where she plays a budding stand-up comic on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She was on the high school wrestling team for 2 years at Highland Park High School. Did you notice who she thanked, by the way?
She thanked
Carol Debo.
Carol, yeah.
Yeah, Carol Debo, our friend Carol
Debo.
How cool
was that?
She was her acting coach.
We love Rachel. She's so cool.
And Carol is such a big shot. I texted her last night to congratulate being thanked. Never heard a word from her.
She'll have her people get back to you now.
She actually had someone text me back to say, Carol will consider your congratulations in regards to her thank you.
That was so cool.
Next. President Trump's got a busy travel day today. He'll be in Tennessee where he's planned to give a speech that casts him as a friend of farmers. I would love to see him in a pair of S-kickers out in the field.
Overalls.
That would be fantastic.
Overalls
and S-kickers.
Right. You think we're going to see that today?
Nope. Nope. But it's good. It's good that he's bringing attention to farmers, and he'll be doing that in Tennessee. And also his positions on trade in some parts of the new tax law threatened to undercut farmers' interests, so farmers may give him an earful. We'll see.
And then he'll be at the college football playoff championship game tonight in Atlanta.
Oh, that's right.
In a box, I assume.
Apparently he's not going to be interviewed by ESPN during the broadcast.
Is that a tradition?
Well, I think generally the president, when he's at big events, usually talks to the network.
The other thing, who's got the Super Bowl this year?
I think NBC.
In Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And Lester Holt will be the guy that's teed up to interview Trump. If, in fact, Trump does it. Remember last year, Trump talked to Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's going to be... I'm glad Lester Holt's doing it.
He won't do it.
You don't think he will?
No, I don't think he will. And the last time he sat down with Lester Holt, it was to tell him that, yes, he fired Comey because of Russia.
Uh-huh.
That's a problem. Next. Steve Bannon backing down from the Fire and Fury book. Apologized for comments in the new book as aides defend Trump's mental fitness. Even Stephen Miller, that little creep, who got thrown off CNN yesterday, literally wouldn't leave the building and had to be escorted out by security guards.
Unbelievable.
Next! SpaceX launches secret satellite Zuma. Wasn't that like a weak beer?
Zima. That was Zima.
Oh, was that Zima?
It was like a cocktail, a fruit drink.
Yeah. Zuma, on the first flight of the year, let's go live to outer space where Steve Grzanich is standing by. Steve, do you know anything about this Zuma thing?
I do, but I can't tell you. It is top secret. I can tell you that the Zuma, whatever it is in orbit.
And have you ever had a Zima?
I have not. But Zuma, there was some suggestion that it may be like a tiny spaceship.
Be cool if you had a Zuma on a Zuma.
But I hear it zooms. It zooms around the planet.
Does it make that noise when I go to
the zoom, 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 zoom.
That's kind of cool. But you can't hear anything in space, can you?
I think if you're close enough to it, it makes enough noise, you might be able to. You can't smell anything in orbit, I don't think. And live from space, I'm Steve Krasanich.
Oh, we have one more, Steve. Can I go back to you?
Okay, sure.
Astronaut John Young has died.
Very sad.
Yeah. Well, what a life, though.
John Young was a Gemini astronaut. He was an Apollo 16 astronaut.
Walked on the moon.
And
was he the last, one of the last crew?
Yeah, next to the last.
Next to the last.
17 was the last. And then he was the first pilot of Space Shuttle Columbia, the first space shuttle.
That? That's a life.
Six times in space.
That is impressive. Yeah. 87 years old.
Yeah.
And then there's this. High temperature forecast for Thursday. Someone grab my thong. 50 degrees.
53 now.
What?
Yes.
If it gets to 55, sell. How about that?
45 on Wednesday, 53 on Thursday, and don't ask about Friday.
What falls off the table?
Snow.
Chance for some snow with a high of 30.
So, well, no complaints are allowed.
No.
We tied the record. 13 straight days below the freezing mark.
Right.
And yeah, I think it was after midnight last night, the first time that we, well, it must have been
that
just
we,
before midnight. No, it was after midnight.
That we warmed up.
That we actually got to above 32.
Yes.
So there you go. And that's your top six, brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I mentioned Doc Moses coming up. Also, this book that many of you may have heard about, which is getting a fair amount of buzz, Why You Eat What You Eat, the science behind the relationship you have and I have and everybody has with food. Why You Eat What You Eat. Because it's rarely because you're hungry. So we'll get to that coming up. How about them Hawks yesterday? Dave, I saw you and your lovely wife at the game. And as Maureen and I were walking in to meet the family. And you and I saw a heck of a game yesterday because the Hawks dominated the
Edmonton
really
did.
Oilers.
They really did. I mean, it was one of their better, I think, all-around games in the season. And they did it with Anton Forsberg, who was solid in net after not winning, unbelievable, since early November. And so now...
Well, he was like a pitcher, though, that was getting no run support for
a long time.
Game after game after game after game. He had a couple bad games, but I mean, overall, he's been pretty solid.
But they gave him an early lead yesterday. Schmaltz with a nice play. Got it past Cam Talbot.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alex, the cat, Alex DeBrincat, to make it 2-0. And then how about the shot by Jordan Oesterle?
Yeah.
That just blasted past Talbot.
Yeah, went through him.
Yeah.
Yeah, created a hole in him.
I know. I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah, it was a tank. Tank running downhill. But 4-1.
4-1 over the Oilers. And now they go to Ottawa tomorrow night and then come home and play a big game against division rival Minnesota Wednesday.
Yeah, got to beat the got to beat Minnesota, got to beat the Blues, got to continue. Abigail Grace was at the game yesterday. And she and I had a race in the concourse, and I beat her.
Oh. You didn't let her win?
Yeah, I let her win.
Yeah, actually. I thought so.
And by the way, it was closer than it should have been.
It's just, that's what she said, too.
She looked at me. She doesn't talk that much. She's two, right? But she looked at me and she said, "You don't run much, do you?" Yeah, well, I used to. I'm old.
Smart kid.
Woke up after midnight. Both my arms and legs were sore.
I think this is the new one, right? This is the up one.
Yeah. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before.
Sweet, sweet song.
And I wish that there was someone I could call. The WGN hotline. I have edema on my thighs, pink stuff in my eyes, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
All right, Doc, listen up. This part's just for you.
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call
call Dr. Morse right now.
How do you make that work musically? Kevin Morse joins us. Yes, John DeCosta, musical director, went back in the studio and re-recorded your song, Doc.
Wow. You know, John's such a great guy, and I'm sure the people down at Northwestern appreciate that they put that in there, so it's great, and we appreciate it.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. How was your weekend?
It was great. Hey, you know, even just the knowledge that it's going to be 40, almost 50 this week just made the, you know, those final cold days tolerable. So it was wonderful.
50 on Thursday. You say 53, Andre? Are you going for 53?
53 is what I'm hoping for. Fingers crossed.
She's saying 53. All right. So let's talk about the new budget bill for a second and what it's going to do to health care. What do we know and what do we don't? What don't we know, I should say?
Yeah, I kind of think it's interesting how quickly this went through. People probably didn't realize some of the impacts that it did because they were all focusing on what's my new tax rate, income tax rate going to be. But unfortunately, one of the impacts of it was a thing that they slipped in with the Affordable Care Act by removing that individual mandate. And the individual mandate said that everyone must have insurance, and if you don't have insurance, then you have to pay a penalty. Taking that out now, individuals have the option as to whether or not to join or not to join the health care, to have the health insurance.
Right. And if you take it out, math being what it is, because, you know, math sucks because it never lies, people are going to have to pay more who need the most insurance because the kids that are healthy that we're paying, they can now choose not to pay.
Right. So a couple of things happen. Exactly that. Those young, healthy people that say, you know what, I'm going to roll the dice. I don't want to pay this fine. Now I don't have to pay this fine at all. I'm going to roll the dice because I don't really need health insurance and I don't want to pay into it. That's one class. There's the other group here that says, boy, I can barely afford it as it is. I'm still going to roll the dice even though I have chronic illnesses and I'm going to hope that nothing bad happens. Both of those are disasters waiting to happen. And when that does happen, now you do have the insurance industry saying, hold on, time out. This math doesn't work for us anymore. The only way it works is if we increase our premiums dramatically. So now you're going to have even the individuals that want insurance that have chronic health problems that are going to the marketplace are going to be charged more.
You can imagine if we suddenly decided a particular age demographic didn't have to pay for car insurance anymore. You know, they could opt out of car insurance. Mm-hmm. Your car insurance premiums go through the roof.
Exactly. You know, and that's just the one part of it. The other part of it is, what's this going to do to the deficit? Because if it impacts the deficit like many economists say it's going to, now the things that are going to come under the microscope are going to be Medicare and Medicaid. What cuts are we going to do? Because it's 30% of our budget right now. So when we start to see our deficit grow and budgets have to, you know, they have to be more in line, where are they going to start to cut? And certainly they'll look at the Medicare and Medicaid and whether they say, you know what, Medicare doesn't start at 65 anymore, it now starts at 67. Or the portion of sharing that you need to pay your portion of is going to go up. So it's going to impact seniors. And then when we see cuts in Medicaid, that's going to impact the poor as well as children, especially in the state of Illinois.
So, look, you can't go in Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine here and change the past to help the future. But if you go back to when Obamacare was instituted / shoved down everybody's throat, if Medicare, Medicaid, from fraud to the architecture of it, was fixed back then and everybody was given access, could that have, you know, made all of this not happen in theory?
Absolutely. The amount of Medicare fraud that goes on in this country is obscene. You know, and people don't even hear about it. But, people from outside of this country that are actually filing Medicare claims and getting paid is billions and billions of dollars, and yet Medicare has not had the ability to identify those individuals and capture those individuals and stop paying them. So really, Medicare fraud is huge. Medicaid fraud, not as bad, because Medicaid's really not a great payer to begin with, so it's not like they're going after a lot of money there, but you'll see a lot of people that actually are on Medicaid that maybe shouldn't be and actually should be on their own insurance. So that portion of it's a little bit more difficult, but the Medicare portion of it is something we really need to get our arms around, or we're going to end up seeing cuts, you know, from either increasing the payment that they have to pay or extending the age before Medicare kicks in.
So less money spent on health care means patients will get less care for chronic illnesses that have bigger consequences. What happens, Doc, if someone comes to an emergency room or is rushed to a hospital and they either don't have insurance or are behind on their payments? What do you do in that situation?
Yeah, you know, the beauty of it, Andrea, is when a patient comes to any emergency room, we don't even know what insurance they have. We could care less what insurance we have. That's for the finance people. The doctors in the emergency room, the nurses in the emergency room, the doctors on the floors are taking care of that patient regardless of their ability to pay. Now, that being said, you're still going to receive great care. Everything's going to, you know, go well for you. But eventually now, hospitals are going to say, wait a second, this math isn't working for us. We can no longer buy that new CAT scan that we need to diagnose strokes quicker. We can no longer invest in new surgical techniques and new surgical equipment. So now all patients are going to suffer because of the impact of some bigger decisions.
Yeah, and you know, the preventative care of this, in all likelihood, has to go away because that costs insurance companies money. But for those of you who have been paying attention in the last couple of years, you've probably seen solicitations for free services from your insurance companies to get you involved in a healthier lifestyle, whatever that means for you. And in some cases, like I noticed with our insurance, when signed up in November, they're incentivizing you to do it as well. They'll, you know, cut a little bit of your premium, or they'll bonus you at the end of the year if you sign up for this as well. I would assume all of that stuff, which you always put in the category, rightfully so, of pay me now or you have to pay me later, that's going to go away.
Yeah, you know, you would hope that companies would still step up and offer discounts and premiums for those employees that they find that are healthy or want to be healthy. The difficult thing is that companies are often starting to look now at how long does an employee stay with me? And why am I going to invest this much money up front if I know that the vast majority of my employees are only going to be here for 5 to 7 years before they move on, or 3 years? So that's the difficult part. But companies with good moral standards are saying, you know what, I want you to be healthy, I'm going to incent you to be healthy, and I'm going to continue to do that. The chronic illness portion of it as well is taking care of individuals and making sure that that blood pressure can be treated, that diabetes can be treated, so that we don't have these devastating illnesses and injuries that could have been prevented with simple, inexpensive medical treatment that's easy on the patient.
Let's take a break, come back more with Doc in a second. And Doc, I know you don't like to talk about this piece because you're modest about it, but I'm concerned too about doctors leaving the business or maybe never getting in.
Yep.
Stand by for that. Hi, how are you? I'm sure there's something I need to be doing now. I'm paying attention to my own show. You're driving to work this morning. You know how it is. You come back from a break. You don't have your headphones on. You know what it's like. 6:50, Dr. Kevin Most. Kind enough to give us his time, as he does every Monday morning. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. A couple more things on this before we move on, Doc. Talking about the end of the Obamacare mandate as part of the new tax structure, which still has a ways to go before that full impact kicks in. But the problems that we've talked about and Doc has cleared up or talked about here are big. So boil this down to the average older person. Give me what it's going to do to a relatively healthy older person and somebody who's not.
So when you say older, what do you mean?
You know, 75 and older.
Okay. So 75, someone that's on Medicare currently and will fall well into the qualifications of Medicare, may need to pay more for their medication, may need to pay more for some of their outpatient services. So their cost may go up. The person that's ill at 75, you know, it's probably going to be about the same. So you're going to start to see, and these people are living on fixed incomes and have budgets that have been set, but eventually, and this is, when I say eventually, it's not going to be that long, where they're going to have to sit there and say, wait a second, we need to change that. Now, that individual who's 63, 64 and thinking, I'm going to retire and get on Medicare at 65, they change it to 67, you're going to have 2 years of premiums that you're going to have to go out to the marketplace now and purchase.
The Medicare reimbursements for doctors, am I right about this? They've continued to go down?
Yeah, well, they don't go down. They pretty much stay flat. So
it's a law, right? They have to pass a law?
Exactly. So what happens is, you know, the cost of living is still continuing to rising, but the cost of payments of Medicare are staying pretty much flat and very, very small increases. And it costs more now to take care of a Medicare patient. And you say, well, how can that be? Because as people live longer, there's more chronic illnesses that we're dealing with in more difficult patients. And when I say difficult, I don't mean that they are difficult, but that their complex medical problems are. So, yeah, every hospital, every doctor's office loses money, I'll say, on Medicare.
Which is why a lot of doctors won't take it, right?
Well, a lot of doctors are starting to say, I'm certainly not taking Medicaid.
Right.
And many are starting to opt out of Medicare as well, which is concerning because we have 10,000 baby boomers being added to the Medicare docket every single day.
And what is this going to do to the supply of doctors? Constant concern is, as this next generation lives to be 100, will there be enough doctors to take care of them? That's why nurse practitioners and physician's assistants is such a boom field to get into. But you need doctors, and has the glut of doctors gone away to the point where people aren't getting into the business the way they used to?
Yeah, so there's two things that are happening there. One is, like you said, we are going to have a shortage, and that shortage, depending on who you listen to, can anywhere be any number from 35,000 to 100,000 over the next decade. So this is not something 20 years, 30 years from now. 25 years from now, yeah, there's going to be a huge shortage. And a couple things are happening currently. You're starting to see a lot of physicians retire a little bit earlier. They're kind of getting burned out. They've gone through these tough times, and they say, I've had enough of medicine, and what's going on in medicine is not something that's enlightening to them anymore, and they don't have that love of the game anymore, and they're starting to step back. And that has two effects. One is it takes great doctors out of the workforce, and two, those are the same doctors that should be cheerleading for young individuals to say, go into medicine, and many of them now are very cynical and saying, you know what, go into computer programming and go into engineering because it's a lot less stressful, and it's a much better. So that's going to impact the number of patients that come in as well. But you're absolutely right with our APNs and our physician assistants, great providers that are going to provide a lot of hopefully primary care and support for specialists, which will allow us to soften that blow of what the shortage is.
Doc, how about some areas that we do have some control over, how we can better ourselves to prevent maybe something catastrophic happening in the long term?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, Andre, because a great study came out of a journal called Lancet just before the holidays, and it talked about the impact of obesity and diabetes on your risk of cancer. And it showed that you have a substantially higher risk of cancer if you're diabetic or obese for specific cancers. And you say, well, wait a second, I can't control if I have diabetes. And yet the vast majority of the type 2 or adult onset diabetes is actually because of our lifestyle. As we get more heavy, as we get more obese, we become pre-diabetic and often then ends up being diabetic as well. So controlling your weight, doing some of these things, control obesity, try to get your weight down, try to stay off of diabetes medicines by keeping your weight down and exercising will actually impact your rate or your possible rate for many cancers, including colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, kidney cancer.
Is there a obvious set of symptoms that means people could be pre-diabetic and they ought to be checked?
Yeah, you know, it's actually based on your BMI. So your BMI, your body mass index, it's a calculation. You can Google it. You can put in your height, put in your weight, and it's going to tell you what your BMI is. The goal is to have a BMI under 25. And I have to be honest with you that the number of people with a BMI under 25 in this country is minuscule, to be honest with you. We are heavier in this country than we need to be, and everyone's well over a BMI of 25. That being said, working towards that goal, every time you drop a point or 2 points or 3 points, you're decreasing your risk for other illnesses, including, you know, even back pain and joint and hip pain. So all of those things that we can do to make ourselves healthier is going to actually help all of us in the long run, to be honest with you, whether you're going to look at the economics of it or the need for physicians.
Yeah, and that's that pay me now or pay me later thing, because for pennies on the dollar, you can monitor somebody's blood pressure, as you always tell us, and help them avoid getting on the medication later or maybe having a stroke down the road. Whereas if that's avoided, you're definitely going to be paying more later.
Absolutely.
So, and is there another study, too, that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, this is a big one. excuse me, this is called All of Us, and this is just kicking off, or will kick off majorly in the spring, but we happen to have a couple beta sites. Northwestern happens to be one. And what this study is, and this is a very important for everyone to listen to, there was a study that started in 1948 called the Framingham Study, and it took the town of Framingham, Massachusetts, and it went to them and said, please help us out. We need to figure out what to do with heart disease. We need to find out how the impact of cholesterol, blood pressure, all of those things. And 5,200 of the 22,000 people, so almost a quarter of the town, stood up and said, I will participate. And when they did, it allowed us to figure out how to treat blood pressure, how to treat heart disease, and that study is still going on. The All of Us is that on steroids. This is a nationwide study that will be starting here. You'll start to see more and more about it, where what we want is we want every individual, we'd love to have as many as possible, the goal is 1 million across the country, to step up and say, you know what, I'm going to participate. You can be healthy, you can be sick, you can live in a suburban area, you can live in a rural area, you can live in an urban area, you can be anybody over the age of 18 right now. And what we're going to do is we're going to collect some specimens from you, we're going to collect some information from you about lifestyle, and we're going to start to build this database so that we can start to understand why a disease starts, and we can have data that says this is the best treatment for it. Right now, unfortunately, we're working off of history and scattered information, so it's very, very important.
How do you sign up?
Right now, there's only a couple places to sign up, but you can sign up at Northwestern, and I'm not touting Northwestern.
Go ahead,
UIC
tout.
Is doing this
tout
as well.
It.
University
tout the heck
Chicago,
out of
Chicago, Rush, North Shore. We just happen to be one of the collection sites, and we're really hoping that in Chicago we can get a couple hundred thousand people. But the biggest thing right now is you can either go and Google it. You can go into nm.org and join All of Us. The information is there if you live downtown and you want to get that done. This spring, we'll start to expand that. But if you think about it, what this is going to allow is going to allow a lot of information about many diseases. This is no longer just about cancer. This could be about the common cold. This could be about influenza. This could be about blood pressure, so that we're able to, called precision medicine, so that we're able to identify things earlier and treat people more appropriately with possibly less medication and less side effects.
nm.org/joinallofus, or as Doc said, Google All of Us Study, and you'll see links to go ahead and volunteer. A lot of information there, Doc.
Yeah.
Always appreciate it.
Let me say one more quick thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you're going to go to the All of Us, make sure you go to the allofus.nih.gov. If you think, oh, it's allofus.org, that's an anti-Trump site, so you're not going to get the information that you want.
Well, you might get some information you want,
yeah,
but
depending
not,
on who you are.
Not health-wise.
All right, give me again, allofus.nih.gov.
Correct.
Okay. Well,
that's,
I mean,
important.
It could have been
worse, yeah,
right?
You got to do that.
Do you remember a few years ago, I was filling in for Spike, and there was a website from some college guys. They were from Northwestern.
Yeah.
And they had come up with, and I don't remember the specific, but Doc, it was like a socks company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was greatsocks.com.
Ah, yeah.
And a woman got a hold of me a couple days later and goes, I don't know what you're thinking of, but that thing was filthy.
This porn site,
yeah.
Sort of
like greatsex.com,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
And, you know, things got ugly from there. So, yeah, you got to be careful. Doc Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Thank you, sir.
You got to take care, guys.
Back with the news next. And by the way, we'll give you the Hawks replay coming up as soon as possible, too. Hamp will talk about the Bears coaching search in the NFL weekend. News first after this on 720 WGN.
An animal!
Dan Hamp. Dan Hamp anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Brought to you by Chevy Drive, Chicago.com. 7:13. We had a really good game, a pretty good game, and then two kind of terrible games on Wild Card Weekend. Before we get to the Bears coaching search, let me bring in the Hall of Famer here. Good morning, Ham.
Hey, greetings, and I think I get a whiff of your coffee. We watched a game that should not have been played in the 20th century. it was that bad.
I remember it seems like it was a Detroit playoff game, or maybe it was a Cowboys, a field goal on the safety. Anyway, they won 5-0. And that 10-3 yesterday with Buffalo and Jacksonville reminded me of that.
It wasn't good. And But it wasn't so bad that we missed Fox. We know that. We'll get to the coaching search here in a little bit. But I will tell you this. You know, the wild card round year after year it's an apt description. You just don't know what you're going to get. And right now, part of the games, you know, you had a subplot of the assistant coaches being involved, and now, you know, Matt Nagy was the offensive coordinator of Kansas City after the egg they laid in the second half. How many people, you raise your hands, want that guy calling plays?
Yeah, about that.
And then, you know, hey, the Saints, pretty impressive offensive weapons, and yet they never really could put the Carolina Panthers away. So, and there's a guy named, you know, Pete Carmichael that apparently is on the coaching list as far as, you know, the Bears looking. So, you know, some subplots, but all in all, I will tell you this, you know, all year long we talked about you know, the young 31-year-old head coach of the Los Angeles Rams and how impressive everything went for him this season. And, boy, the Atlanta Falcons went in and just took the air right out of him, didn't they?
Yeah, and it was surprising. I mean, you know, you still only have a second-year quarterback there, but the way they rolled all season long, you certainly expected in their first home playoff game in forever, where they were looking for a home playoff win in L.A. since I think the Raiders were the last team to win an L.A. playoff game, and that was in the early 90s. Yep. They laid an egg, too. So, yeah, it was just a collection of bad. But am I right about this? Isn't Dave the conference championship weekend? Or is it the weekend before? Is it this coming weekend that usually produces the next games? Or the best games, I should say?
I think, Hamp, I don't know about you. I think the divisional round is pretty compelling.
It's usually pretty good.
I think the conference championships there was a time where the conference championships always outdid the Super Bowl. And but lately, the Super Bowls, for the most part, have been a little better. So I think that's kind of why we have that perception.
By the way, I found, Hamp, that 1970 divisional round, Lions versus the Cowboys. The Cowboys knocked off the Lions 5-0 to go to the NFC championship game. I don't even think Roger Staubach was in town for it. Did you see anything particularly impressive this weekend that makes you think somebody is going to lead some team that we saw this weekend to maybe all the way to the conference championship?
Let's just say this. You know, Atlanta, from the opening day, they played like sick birds all year. And they had to win their last game to get into the playoffs. And somehow, some way, they have resuscitated their team and beating the Rams, and now, you know, here they are the first team in history to be named as favorites over the number one seed in the NFL playoffs. You know, a lot of that is because the quarterback injury of the Philadelphia Eagles, yep, of Carson Wentz. So, hey, I could see Atlanta going into Philadelphia. I could see it. If they play like they did with Julio and Sanu, those receivers, which, you know, you can't cover, if they play like that, they're going to be salty. And we're going to have right now, Minnesota is a 3.5-point favorite, and I think by game time it could be down to about even, because let's be realistic. The further you peel the onion back on Minnesota, as good as their story has been, a season of 13 wins, they just don't have a whole lot of just scary talent on offense. They've got a couple of pedestrian running backs. They got a quarterback that was a backup in Los Angeles last year. Their defense playing pretty good, but that's going to be a real close game. Don't be shocked if the Saints win that, and then the NFC championship game will be back in New Orleans between Atlanta and New Orleans. Now on the other side, it's pretty simple. It's going to be Pittsburgh and New England, and the horrendous officiating that we've seen all year that was on full display yesterday and Saturday. The officiating that blew a call that basically cost Pittsburgh home field advantage, it's all going to come to play, and then we'll see what happens, you know, in that game. But as it looks right now, the NFC that had a lot of people saying, "Wow, what a great year! What great depth!" Well, it could be. I think it's the fourth and fifth seed, or the fourth and sixth seed in the NFC Championship game, and it's just who gets hot at the right time. Yep. And right now, it looks like both those teams are hot.
You got to get in the tournament. When we come back, we'll talk about the Bears coaching search, and also, are Bill Belichick and Tom Brady breaking up? Do they need a little space? Do they need a little time apart? Or is it permanent? That was the big NFL drama over the weekend as well. More with the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton, sponsored by Chevy. ChevyDriveChicago.com. Number one, 7 years in a row.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
Dan Hampton, sponsored by Chevy. ChevyDriveChicago.com. As I said, 7 years at number one. That's a pretty good run. All right, so Ham, do you make anything out of the big drama of the weekend that Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft and Tom Brady are all going to get some time apart and Belichick might even go to New York?
No, not at all. Why would they? And, you know, a lot of times, there has to be certain exterior pressures put on that kind of, get the juices going again. Maybe this is, in a crazy way, abstract way, this will kind of get them focused and rallied. But no, the one thing that has been so impressive is that, and let's look at the Bears. And over the weekend, I had some people say, "Oh, well, you said some things," it's for a reason. Now, we beat the New England Patriots into the turf 30-something years ago, and from that moment on, now they've rebounded and won five or six Super Bowls, and we have won none. Now, they have identified the important parts of building a team and running a team, and we haven't. And at some point, you've just got to stand up and say, okay, when you have won 45 of the last 112 games, you're in the bottom four in point scoring over the last seven. There's a lot of reasons to say we're not doing things the right way. And, people go, "Oh, wow, why did you say that?" Well, tolerance and apathy are the last two virtues of a dying society. I have neither one. And qualifying nerve is like trying to qualify air. I can't see it, but I know when you don't have it. And we've got to find it. Now, in this coaching search, we need to go ahead and identify coaches with the type of fiber, the metal, the foresight that we see from Bill Belichick and his what has it been, almost 20 years of excellence. They do certain things the right way. And, you can't be a player's pal. You can't be a buddy and a goofball with the guy. Hey, there has to be accountability. There has to be, and part of that story is about, Tom Brady, almost being too big to be criticized when the offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, basically said, "Hey, we had a receiver open. You missed him." And Brady, blows up. And guess what? Nobody wants to be told, they made a stain on the carpet. Everybody wants to be the hero. Well, guess what? Tom Brady knows how to take those type of situations and turn them around and use them as motivation to become what I think is the greatest player in the history of the game. So, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. And do I think that they're on the verge of implosion? Not a chance.
Hamp, you made a comment when we started this morning about Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs, and you look at what Kansas City did over the course of the year, and I know they hit some rough spots after a great start, but they still are in the top four, I think, offensively in every category in the AFC, if not the NFL. How much stock do you really put into a bad half of football in a playoff game? Because it's not just him. I mean, it's the whole pack. That whole team had a collapse on Saturday, not just the offense.
Well, the team had a collapse in the middle of a season, and the reports are. And see, I'm not in the room. I'm not asking the questions, but that would be a question that has to be asked, and it has to be answered. What happened you know, in weeks 10 through 14, when you guys couldn't find your way out of the locker room, who was calling plays? Why were you calling plays? Who was hurt? Why were you going in this? And all those different things. That is Ryan Pace's job. He has to identify who has the answers. Right. When you've got the questions, then you basically identify who can answer them. And if Matt Nagy can, good for him. Unfortunately, they couldn't Saturday. They couldn't answer the questions when they needed to. Now, your point of it being how much can you let one half of football, it's a pretty big half. You know, year after year after year getting into the playoffs and then collapsing, there's a certain thread that maybe you don't want to, you know, be a part of. So I do know this, that his name has come out of, you know, left field. You know, it's a pretty simple thing. They've got a running back that was number one in the NFL. They kind of forgot about him in November, but kind of went back to him in December. And those are the kind of lapses that makes you kind of think, do you know what you're doing? Because how many times this year did we see our offense and our offensive coordinator forget about what's important, how to run the ball, when to run the ball, how to balance the offense, how to come with design bootlegs and play action passes once the running game starts. So, you know, there's kind of maybe the best coach available right now is retiring, and that's Bruce Arians. You know, he'd be I personally thought he would be a fantastic fit here 5 years ago, but it looks like he's, you know, he and his wife won out now. But there has to be other coaches that know the answers. And again, I'm not in Kansas City. I don't know who was hurt.
Yeah, but between you and Dave, who are your top three?
Well, okay. And no question about it. Pat Shurmur, the guy in Minnesota. And I wasn't, you know, really like over the moon about his play calling against the Bears in the finale. But, you know, quite honestly, they didn't need to do a whole bunch. And they did what they had to do. They put the Bears, you know, away with a, you know, and beat them handily. So they didn't really have to show much. And, you know, Blake Bortles, as bad as he played yesterday, he said, well, in the last game, they didn't want me running, showing things. So let's see what Minnesota does this week. Let's see how Pat Shurmur devises an offense against a decent Saint defense. They're going to have to score points. You know, the Saints are going to be good for, you know, 25 or 30, even against that Minnesota defense. So let's see if he can do it. He's number one. Number two, John DeFilippo. You know, number three would be Dave Taub. Dave Taub has always been a very – hey, let's be realistic. Mike Ditka was no genius innovator, but he was a great motivator, a great appraiser of talent. Everybody's got different strengths. I think Dave Taub's got a lot of great stuff that he could bring as a head coach.
You didn't mention one guy who did interview with the Bears, the first guy to interview, and that was Vic Fangio.
Vic Fangio is the name. Okay. And again, a lot of times when you're a head coach, you have to be kind of the alpha. And Vic has always been one of those guys in the background. And at some point, that's where, you know, you kind of kick the strands off and say, hey, what about me? What about me? He hasn't done that. And to his credit, he's been a great coach. This year, maybe his best job ever, you know, without your bet, four of your best five linebackers and you still wind up in the top 10, that's great work. But I don't know how much he wants to be a head coach. Maybe he just says, hey, I want to be the highest paid defensive coordinator. So Vic Fangio is a name that I would not be scared of.
It's Dan Hampton. He's your Hall of Famer. He'll keep an eye on the playoffs for us as we roll into the divisional weekend coming up. It should be interesting. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Picks on Friday. Go Bears.
All right. Sounds good. That's Dan Hampton. I have a pair of tickets to see your exciting Chicago Blackhawks. And as Dave and I said, between the Rangers game last week and yesterday, you're going, man, it's in there. It's in there, and they could do this, and they have to do this. That's what was really encouraging about yesterday as well. Blackhawks in Detroit on Sunday, January 14th. And if you win, you're going to be entered to win four season tickets for next year. This is still an unbelievable prize. Every time I think about this, from Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing, it's phenomenal. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons, and find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingAndCooling.com. You got to tell me who this famous Chicagoan is. Are you ready? First yes. correct answer. Dunbar Vocational, then Kennedy King, a Chicago idol with a voice born to sing, a Grammy and an Oscar, raised her own self-esteem. It was more than a dream girl could ever have dreamed.
Oh.
You got this one, Doug.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, you really do.
I do, for real this time. Yeah, okay. I do.
Dunbar Vocational, then Kennedy King, a Chicago idol with a voice born to sing, a Grammy and an Oscar, raised her own self-esteem. It was more than a dream girl could ever have dreamed. Mm. First correct caller, 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. And Ryan Nobles is coming up, and a big announcement from this show. Speaking of those Blackhawks that we haven't even gotten to yet.
Wow.
Okay. Crazy what's happening Woo-hoo. Here.
And Jennifer Hudson was the correct answer. We all knew that from the quiz that Steve just gave. We do have a winner. Jennifer Boyce from Elmhurst wins a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks against Detroit on Sunday, January 14th, and entered to win Four Seasons tickets for next year. That's courtesy of Four Seasons Heating and Air Conditioning and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com.
It's 7:43. All right. We got so much to do today, but this is big. We've been meeting about this, planning about it since the late 60s. What?
Yes.
No. But meeting about and planning it recently. And, you know, Amy Cochran, who just came back from Las Vegas, said, this Las Vegas Golden Knights team, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, in Vegas,
yeah.
Every hotel is doing merch. Everybody's taking credit for them. They're selling a ton of tickets. It's a hot story. So we thought, look at the schedule, right? Take a look at the schedule. You know what? I probably need some music for this. Hit it, Joe.
And I'm just a devil with no despair.
How would you like to go to Las Vegas for Valentine's Day with me?
Yeah.
Imagine how romantic it would be.
Will you buy the winner flowers and candy and wine? And
well, here's what we're doing. The ultimate Blackhawks fan search is on. We're giving you the opportunity to prove it for the chance to win a trip for two to Las Vegas to see the Hawks and the Golden Knights on February 13th. We'll do the show on Valentine's Day from there. And all you got to do is this. Upload a photo showing your Blackhawks fan craziness to WGNradio.com/contest. We need a picture. We need a picture of what a knucklehead you are. Could be a man cave. Could be a woman cave. Could be your car. Could be your house. Could be whatever. You go to WGNradio.com/contest and you can watch the Hawks and the Golden Knights in Las Vegas, or as I like to call it, Steva Las Vegas.
And also, too, you're a minister. You can always marry whoever.
If it's a couple that would like me to marry them in Vegas, I could do that.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't think that's really an issue in Vegas. I think there's plenty of places.
They're not me.
Yeah, but how often do you get Steve to marry you? That's pretty cool.
I've never done a wedding in Nevada. I can start now. And by the way, I'm 9 for 10. My average is pretty good.
That's very good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Hit the jackpot with your best Blackhawks snapshot. Get your entry in and go to Vegas with us for Valentine's Day. Pretty cool.
More when you say with us.
Yeah. Well, you have a game.
Oh.
You have a Northwestern game.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
I'd be happy to have you join us. You got a Northwestern game.
Join us.
At 7:45, let me say at least hello to Ryan Nobles before we get into the meat of this thing. Steve, Las Vegas. Ryan, don't you wish you were eligible? Can you see you and I running around Vegas?
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun, honestly, Steve. I'm actually considering calling my wife right now to ask her if she wants to renew our vows, just so that we could have the honor of you remarrying us. That would be fantastic.
And what a great third wheel I'd be for the two of you on your romantic trip to Las Vegas. We got a lot to talk about with Ryan Nobles from CNN in just a moment, including the fallout from Fire and Fury, whether or not the president can focus for more than 10 minutes, and why it all matters, regardless of what your political leanings are. And by the It Matters piece, meaning, is the president okay between the ears? At 7:46, we got to do traffic first. We're back to Mary for that.
And traffic sponsored by Count Temps on the Edens 28, outbound, inbound 24, the outbound Kennedy, about 45 minutes to the airport, an hour now coming in from O'Hare, and about 40 minutes from the Edens 26 Express. Inbound Eisenhower's an hour from 53, 42 from Mannheim, 48 outbound to 53. Inbound Stevenson's at 52 from the Tri-State, and the Ryan's 20 from 95th. Bishop Ford slows from 130th, 57 from 115th. Tractor trailer fire eastbound Indiana Toll between State Road 49 and 421.
1 Lakeshore Drive is very slow now from Lawrence on down to Belmont. Demand for top talent is at an all-time high. Account Temps can help you find highly skilled temporary accounting and finance professionals who fit your needs and hit the ground running. Account Temps, the Robert Half Company. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
We're trying to figure out exactly. You probably heard part of the on-air meeting off-air that we were just having a second ago. All right, so the game is on the 13th.
Correct.
And that night, I'll be on with Justin.
Yes, before the pregame show.
And then the following morning, I'll be on with Pete, who'll be back here for, you know, at least a couple of hours.
Yes.
So and Andre will be running around Vegas gambling.
Yes. So I just, I'm a stickler for the details. You keep saying go to Vegas with me for Valentine's Day, but they're like, should be coming home on Valentine's Day. So
well,
I'm just,
but please, so you spend a trying to make the trip a little saucy.
I know. But they'll have to make plans when they get home on Valentine's Day because they won't be in Vegas.
A compromise like Valentine's morning.
Valentine's morning with Steve.
With okay. Steve, yeah.
At Steve's room.
It's going to be a very romantic morning. Super romantic morning. All right, just want to make sure I, you know, because this is one of the few times where I have even partial points that I can say I scored, because you're not entirely right about this. You're only partially right.
Well, okay, yes.
Wait.
The game is the 13th. It's not Valentine's
Mayor,
Day.
I think you're right, but that's just...
I'm trying to sell the Valentine's
Day. You will see Steve at the airport on the 14th when you leave.
At this point, I'm going back the 11th. It's Steva Las Vegas. Details on the contest page at WGNRadio.com. Thank you, Mary, for that. Ryan Nobles joins us next.
Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us. Ryan, I don't know if you'll be in CNN's New York headquarters anytime soon, or well, I should say Washington headquarters anytime soon. But if Stephen Miller is, you know, hiding behind a desk, you may want to call security. What a weird deal that was. Stephen Miller, one of the chief advisors to the president, refused to leave CNN yesterday after Jake Tapper rightfully cut off his interview where he wouldn't answer any questions and just kept talking. Just bizarre. Very bizarre. Anyway, here's a question I want to ask you. Based on Fire and Fury, the book that came out early on Friday, you've traveled with the president. People talk to you off the record all the time, and it seems that more and more folks have stepped forward and said, look, I'm not going to tell you who said this, but I am going to tell you that everything I saw in the book that was of a meaty nature are things I've heard before. Does that jive with your accounts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the book, by and large, is a pretty accurate account of what happens in the White House, and that's not just from what Michael Wolff is reporting, but it's from what a lot of other people have said. And if you kind of string together the reporting that the various White House reporters have done from every network over the course of the Trump presidency, it marries up pretty nicely with Fire and Fury. There isn't a whole lot of distance between what you've seen come out of the White House and what you've seen in that book. Now, this Wolff maybe takes some liberties in his descriptions of things, kind of turning it into somewhat of a novel as opposed to a straight piece of journalism, perhaps, but that's the way these books are written. But I think the substance of what he's reporting and, you know, the basis of which he comes to that reporting is accurate. And no one that is close to the White House and understands the White House is disputing that. Certainly, you know, the president's surrogates are out there trying to spin it in a different way. And you even saw that in the Miller interview with Jake Tapper. He didn't necessarily refute the claims in the book. They try and are selling it in a different way and trying to pose it under a different light. I don't know how much that works, but I don't think you can argue with the facts that have come out of this book, and I think that's part of the reason that you see the White House scrambling.
I don't sit around and worry that Donald Trump's going to accidentally start a nuclear war. One, because I think he certainly doesn't want to, and secondarily, because I don't believe that with General Kelly and McMaster and General Mattis in the line of fire, poor choice of words there, that there are fail-safe methods to prevent that from happening. However, there's a lot of damage a damaged president can do. And the fact that we're even discussing this, and I mean everybody is discussing this, is an absolute indication that there's a problem, right?
I would think so. I mean, I you can't ignore it. I think you can continue to kind of bury your head in the sand if you're a Trump supporter and act like the kind of impulsive nature by the president, which is best displayed by his Twitter feed, is something that isn't causing trouble for this administration. I mean, it's an undeniable fact at this point. And I think that, you know, the Twitter feed somewhat gives us a window into his conduct. But then when you see Michael Wolff's reporting in this book, and he, you know, he basically sat on a couch in the Oval Office for 6 months and watched how everything went down. I mean, it's hard to ignore that. I mean, this is not a, the president keeps talking about stability. I mean, you can make a lot of arguments for what's happening with this administration, but stability is not among them. And when you, when you're operating in chaos at the various highest levels of the geopolitical situation in this country, or in this world, I should say, I mean, that can lead to trouble. And I, you know, I, you make a point about the people that the president has surrounded himself with, and I do think there's some truth to that. But at the end of the day, this guy's still the president. He's the one that makes the call. And you have to wonder, you know, what all these other leaders are thinking around him as we move forward with some of these really important decisions that need to be made, not just what's happening domestically, but what's happening with our allies and our enemies around the world. You know, at what point does there become a breaking point that you can't move back from? You know, everything up until this point, we've been able to kind of sit on this thin line, but there could be a time where you cross over that line and then it may be too late.
Ryan Michael Wolff this morning standing by all of his comments, of course, on MSNBC, saying that they were absolutely directed at Steve Bannon and Don Jr. So my question to you, will there be fallout from the book as far as the Mueller investigation is concerned? Could Mueller subpoena Michael Wolff based on the book? I mean, will this have any effect on the investigation directly?
I mean, I don't see how it can't, Andrea, and I don't have any kind of specific indication that the Mueller team is taking what they've learned from this book and going forward. I mean, my guess is that the Mueller team probably knows even more than what we've seen in this book. But, you know, I think a lot has been made about kind of the theatrics of the White House, the palace intrigue in the administration that came out of that book. But there's a lot of substantive information that the White House has still not answered. And the best example of that is that Steve Bannon's accusation that Don Jr. knew exactly what he was getting into when he got into this meeting, and that perhaps those people in that meeting actually met with the president of the United States before he was president of the United States during the campaign. And that was something that Stephen Miller was asked directly by Jake Tapper on Sunday, and he never answered that question.
Right.
He said he had no knowledge of that. So the administration can continue to spin, and they can try and, you know, which they often do, they try and, you know, cast aspersions on the authors of these reports. But the substance of the material is something they still have yet to refute. They still have yet to provide answers to. And I have to imagine that when you're looking at all of this stuff, and if you're Robert Mueller, that's part of your investigation. And that's part of what leads you to think that some sort of an indictment needs to come down, or you take this investigation to the next level.
The best way to handle a book about you, whether it's true or not, when you're a powerful person, and certainly the president of the United States, would be to say, I'm very busy here. My team is very busy here. A book is a book, and we're moving on. Not to react like an intemperate child. And this is the out of what, a dozen tweets or more yesterday? These are the two that are really troubling to me. And again, this is the president's words on Twitter. Throughout my life, my two greatest assets have been mental stability and being, really smart. Now, I'm not making that up. That's exactly the sentence he typed. My two greatest assets have been mental stability and being, really smart. He goes on to say, I went from very successful businessman to top TV star. I think that would qualify as not smart, but genius, a very stable genius. Okay, who says I'm, really smart?
Unless you're doing writes it out.
And writes it out unless you're doing something off of SNL. It's stunning to me.
It's one thing when that's not the first time he said in that exact way, I'm really smart. It's one thing to say that kind of extemporaneously, but when you're actually sitting down to compose something that you have the opportunity to edit and look over before you fire out to millions and millions of people, you think you find a way to present it a little bit more dignified, but that's not his MO. And, you know, I do think, Steve, and I, at points you have to take a step back. And he's not wrong about a couple of things. He's not wrong that everything that he's done over the course of his life in terms of his own person and his ability to move forward has worked. He's right. He was a successful businessman. He was a successful TV star. He did win the presidency
on the first try. But that, I think, is part of his problem. He's never really been in a situation where he's been forced to confront the deficiencies in his personality because he's somehow always found a way to get ahead. And I don't think that's a problem with just him. I think that's a problem with all presidents. I mean, you have to have an enormous ego, and that ego Sure. is fed huge when you become president of the United States. But presidents, the most successful presidents, have found a way to take a step back, be more self-reflective, realize that no human being is really truly big enough for this job, and have to understand that they've got to be a little bit more aware of everything that's going on around him. And up until this point, there's just been no evidence that this president has grasped that really important aspect of being the most powerful person in the world.
And the other concern is, if you're a foreign leader, whether you're the leader of China or the leader of some rogue third world nation that maybe has a band of terrorists that you're harboring and funding, you know that the one way to get at this guy is to question his intelligence or to insult him mm-hmm. in any particular way. You can't react the way he's reacted like this and not be concerned. You think about your own narrow self-interest, whatever they might be. The reason that infrastructure is not being talked about, the reason whether or not you're going to get more money in your paycheck isn't talked about, the reason for all of this is because, and I think Cuomo this morning on your air made this point, 8 of his last 10 tweets have been about him and what he's upset about what people are saying about him. Grow the hell up. You're yeah. the president.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I thought Barack Obama was the most successful at was just shrugging off the criticism and the attacks against him. It's not as if Barack Obama was criticized less as president of the United States. He just didn't ever engage on those points. He never would have. Yeah, he never would have gone down to the level of people that are throwing pot shots at him. And this book is the most nasty and poisonous elixir for this White House. I mean, it has all these different combination of things that set him off, questioning his intelligence, suggesting that he's not in control, criticizing his popularity. These are all things that just goad at Donald Trump, and it's left, it's just exposed him in a way that he's never been exposed before. And you're right. I mean, this, if you took the Donald Trump personality out of the equation, this has not been a terrible year for this administration. You do have record stock market numbers. The job numbers are as good as they've ever been. They did end up passing this tax reform plan, and I believe the jury is still out as to whether or not the American people are going to approve of this. I think if you do see a lot of people with more money in their paychecks, they're going to feel good about this. But he's not been able to take credit for any of it because he's so obsessed with a kind of almost to a certain degree superficial criticisms of him as a human being. And if he can't get past that, it's going to be very difficult for him to accomplish anything in this presidency.
And that's why his mental stability is being questioned. And that's why it's important. Ryan Nobles, thanks. We'll see you all over social media at Ryan Nobles. And again, Ryan Nobles and his wife hoping to win so I can be the third wheel and ruin their Vegas vacation.
I don't know. Now that it's not actually on Valentine's Day, I'm starting to second guess this.
Why don't you and Sandberg have a meeting?
Mary really salvaged the whole thing.
Yeah, well, as usual, Sandberg salvages everything. Back with the news next at 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Dean Richards live from Channel 9 in his appropriate black suit.
Are we going to kick it around now? I saw on Twitter that you were watching the Golden Globes as I was watching the Golden Globes.
Live tweeted the whole thing.
And then, you're right. You were live tweeting and then said to tune in this morning at this time that Dean Richards and I will be kicking it around.
You know what my favorite tweet was from last night?
Hmm.
Did Daniel Day-Lewis lose? Or did Daniel Day-Lewis win playing Gary Oldman, playing Winston Churchill?
I thought Gary Oldman was playing Harry Carey. He had the same glasses.
He did have Harry Carey's glasses, didn't he?
Yeah.
Gigantic. Without a doubt.
They used them for a coffee table to put their drinks down on later on.
Well, I want to get to Oprah, obviously, because I thought she was the story of the night. But an interesting conversation topic, if you will, came up, and that is this. Is this a one-off, or does this change the way fashion is looked at in these award shows? The Grammys are coming up. The Oscars are coming up.
Right.
What, is it going to change? What do you think?
Seth Meyers even referred to that, saying, you know, to all future hosts of award show, meaning the Grammys and the Oscars, that he's the chimp being that's shot off into space. he's the test balloon for how hosts need to handle award shows now, given the, you know, the serious, somewhat, you know, and somber nature of what's been going on.
Oh, you want to hear the clip? This is a little bit of Seth.
Well, this doesn't include that particular comment, but I thought Seth was perfect last night. Everyone wondered.
Yeah, in an impossible position.
How do you host this show given the solemn nature? I thought he did a great job.
Here it is.
Good evening, ladies and remaining gentlemen. It's 2018. Marijuana is finally allowed and sexual harassment finally isn't. For the male nominees in the room tonight, this is the first time in 3 months it won't be terrifying to hear your name read out loud. They tried to get a woman to host this show. They really did. They said, hey, how would you like to come and be judged by some of the most powerful people in Hollywood? And women were like, well, where is it? And they said, it's at a hotel. And long story short, I'm your host tonight. And we're all here tonight courtesy of the Hollywood Foreign Press, a string of three words that could not have been better designed to infuriate our president. The only name that would make him angrier would be the Hillary Mexico Salad Association.
So
well,
good.
I think it's time to address the elephant not in the room. Harvey Weinstein isn't here tonight. Because, well, I've heard rumors that he's crazy and difficult to work with. But don't worry, he'll be back in 20 years when he becomes the first person ever booed during the In Memoriam. It'll sound like that.
It's good.
It was an interesting reaction, though. As soon as he started going down Harvey Weinstein Road, it was like the crowd was still afraid Harvey could get them, Dean.
There were a couple of groan moments. I mean, it was probably the most uncomfortable moment during the monologue. I forget what he said about Kevin Spacey, but there was also a groan moment for Kevin Spacey also. But I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought it was just absolutely the perfect way of dealing with what was going on last night, dealing with the theme of the night. It was very interesting that this show, the Golden Globes, that, you know, is best known for being the award show where everybody's drunk, everybody says unpredictable things. It's Ricky Gervais, it's Tina Fey, it's Amy Poehler. You know, it's all about comedy and irreverence and insulting people. And last night it was, very serious tone about women's rights, about the sexual abuse scandal. And nobody was more powerful nor poignant than Oprah Winfrey giving what I think is not only the speech of the evening, but an historic speech that will go down in history of award show speeches. It was unbelievable.
Nice tease, by the way. We'll play it when we come back.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
824, back to Dean. Hey, by the way, Dean, was there some weird pacing last night with the show? It's like they had too many awards, or it took people too long to get to the stage?
It seemed like they let the show breathe in the first half hour and then sped everybody up for the rest of the show.
Yeah, there was a lot of cool pairings that came out, and all they had time for was to read the names of whatever they were announcing.
Yeah, literally, some cool pairings, and they literally just said three words. There was a point at which director Guillermo del Toro, who won the Best Actor honors, they started to play the music on the guy. Mm-hmm. And he said, wait, stop the music. I've been waiting 25 years. I'm not going to be long. Just let me finish what I have to say.
Right.
It's so rude when they do that. I mean, especially when you get to the big awards.
Yeah.
And you really want to hear what the people have to say. Of the big awards, by the way, three billboards over outside Ebbing, Missouri, was one of the big winners. It took four awards last night. Best Picture Drama, Frances McDormand won for Best Actress. Sam Rockwell, so deservedly so, won for Best Supporting Actor, and it won Best Screenplay. The Shape of Water only took two. Everybody thought that that was going to wind up getting many, many more. Completely snubbed, interestingly, Dunkirk. Completely snubbed.
It's a great movie.
Get Out, which was a big surprise. Completely snubbed The Post, which everybody thought was going to be a huge winner last night. Zero awards for any of those. Maybe the biggest snub of them all last night was Will and Grace. Yeah. They were nominated for Best TV Comedy or Musical, as the category goes. And Eric McCormack was nominated for Best Actor from a TV comedy or musical. Those would have been the 28th and 29th Golden Globe nominations for Will and Grace. They have never, ever, ever won a Golden Globe.
Is that right?
I can't believe that.
That's crazy.
They have been snubbed 29 times.
That's amazing.
For Golden Globe.
Especially now, because it's even funnier now.
I think so. I think they're doing a great job.
So Andre and I started the day with talking about how great Oprah was. She just killed it. We don't need to be panting about whether or not she's going to run in 2020.
Right.
Although a lot of people are there, there's a lot of tweeting about.
Yeah, but
Oprah,
can't it just be a great
Oprah
speech?
Oprah 2020. Yep.
Can't it just be a great speech in the moment?
Dean, her speech, I know we've all agreed, moving, powerful, eloquent. It was just, I've never heard anything so powerful in my life. And I'm not Oprah. I do like Oprah, but I'm not. Yeah. You know, screaming from the top of the Tribune Tower. I thought she was fantastic. And people were asking this morning, was that pre-scripted or was that off the top of her head?
Oh, I'm sure it was pre-scripted.
Okay.
Yeah, she must have written it.
I'm sure that she was reading off of a
prompter?
A teleprompter.
Okay.
And probably, you know, very well rehearsed. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Oh, I don't either, because I was going to say, I mean, look at how often, I mean, everybody will stumble. Or I don't think she said
She
just was so eloquent in that speech.
Stedman was holding up cue cards. Here's a clip from Oprah last night.
I'd like to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, because we all know that the press is under siege these days. But we also know that it is the insatiable dedication to uncovering the absolute truth that keeps us from turning a blind eye to corruption and to injustice. To tyrants and victims and secrets and lies. I want to say that I value the press more than ever before as we try to navigate these complicated times, which brings me to this. What I know for sure is that speaking your truth is the most powerful tool we all have. And I'm especially proud and inspired by all the women who have felt strong enough and empowered enough to speak up and share their personal stories. Each of us in this room are celebrated because of the stories that we tell. And this year, we became the story. But it's not just a story affecting the entertainment industry. It's one that transcends any culture, geography, race, religion, politics, or workplace. So I want tonight to express gratitude to all the women who have endured years of abuse and assault because they, like me.
We dropped out there at the end. She was phenomenal.
Yeah, went through, you know, people who are not celebrities who went through abuse and endured that, you know, the people in that room are telling those stories. She was absolutely amazing. And, you know, people are saying there was a pretty good resounding trashing on some social media last night
of Oprah.
It was racist.
Come on.
So hate-filled. So I mean, there is that. But you know, regardless of your political persuasion, and you know, even hey, for all you racists out there, who doesn't want? Let's speak the truth. Let's be honest. Who doesn't want that? Does anyone, yeah, here's anyone against
who doesn't
that?
Want women to not be harassed? I mean, come
who
on.
Who doesn't want women to not be harassed? What is there to trash somebody about saying, let's not abuse somebody, let's get not assault somebody?
Get a life.
Right. No. Absolutely. Ridiculous. I also like, too, Dean, and I know you mentioned this briefly, Carol Burnett, Jennifer Aniston, Emma Stone, Shirley MacLaine. I like the young, I'll phrase it this way, young Hollywood and younger Hollywood being paired together.
She's talking about the old ladies with the young ladies.
I think you can say old, yeah.
Isn't that cool, though? I mean, just for nothing more, solidarity between the
that's
generations
cool.
And to show
well thought out.
Maybe people today who aren't as familiar with Carol Burnett or Shirley MacLaine or Susan Sarandon.
I loved seeing Thelma and Louise together.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate they didn't have a second to interact at all.
No, they were just cut completely. By the way, two things. One, where was Michael Douglas? Any thought on that?
Don't know. I've been trying to find that out myself. Because 101-year-old Kirk Douglas, his father, appeared on the show last night with his daughter-in-law, Michael Douglas's wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones. I have not been able to find out where Michael Douglas was. I assume he's working. I hope it's not health-related because, you know, as you'll recall, he did have bout with tongue cancer a while back.
Yeah, and Dad's 101. Michael Douglas has got to be 75?
Right. Yeah.
Somewhere in there?
That seems about right.
And the last thing is there was were you aware of at what point Oprah decided not to give everyone a car? Because I thought that was coming as well.
One thing that I did notice, you know, Oprah was sitting right in the front row.
With Stedman.
With Stedman. And
Gail.
How intimidating that is. I don't care how famous you are.
Right. Yeah.
Oprah's in your face. And you've just been called up to the stage. You're having a,
right.
You just learned that you've won. You're out of breath. You're nervous.
And you're being judged by
you're
Oprah.
Trying to remember. And, oh, there she is right in front of you.
Right.
Rachel Brosnahan, who is from Highland Park, won Best Actress for a TV comedy for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She came out of the Wilmette Theater, by the way.
Yeah, Carol Debo.
The training in Carol Debo. I'm sure they're super, super happy and super proud of her this morning. So that was our big Chicago moment last night. And she commented in the middle of her speech, she just looks down and goes, "Oh, hi, Oprah."
Well, you got the thank you to Carol. This is cool. This is our friend Carol Debo. This is Brosnahan saying thank you.
To Ken and my entire team, to Carol. Hi, Oprah.
That's all you need. That was Carol Debo. She was saying thank you, Carol Debo.
That's before cool. Oprah.
Before Oprah. Before Oprah distracted her.
Yeah. Very cool. All right, bring it full circle all the way back. Fashion, will it be a story going forward or not?
I don't know if they're going to do the all black again for the Grammys. I haven't heard that, or the Oscars. I thought it was great. I thought it was an extremely powerful way to, you know, get a message without hitting you over the head with it. Interestingly, there was only one person that I saw who wasn't wearing black. And that is the president of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. She's from India, and she said that red is the appropriate color for such an occasion in her country. So that's what that's what she wore. But it looked like she wasn't supporting the movement. She very definitely was supporting the movement.
Well, there were two actresses in the crowd that Andrea told me about earlier whose names you might not know.
Blanca Blanco, and I forget who the other one was.
Yeah. But other than that, wearing, all black.
Not wearing, yeah. I don't think it's going to affect it. What I found very interesting, I don't know if you watched any of the red carpet coverage before and after, where they usually have these space heads on, you know, who are, you know, they're like fashion bloggers.
Right.
And, oh, this is so fabulous, and that's so fabulous. And it was so completely inappropriate last night, trying to talk about, you know, who was wearing, you know, their dress, their black dress.
Oh, they still did it? I didn't know they did it.
They did for a little while on the pre-show on E, and then they stopped it because I think they realized how completely inappropriate it was. And the post-show, they went back to it again. They have, like, you know, these four, you know, talking idiots trying to do the same thing, trying to talk about fashion after this very moving you know, award show that took place.
Well, E.T. made the right call. Remember, Kelty Knight was on last week when Dean was in L.A. saying E.T. had a meeting and they weren't going to do the fest.
Right. And I saw that part, Dean, where they stopped literally right in the middle. I thought those three commentators on E! Were awful as well. And Juliana, at one point, they stopped and she said, now we're going to start asking, why are you wearing black? What does the movement mean to you? Which is what they should have done from square one, if anything.
Yeah, well, and they should have continued, you know, and tried to keep some journalistic integrity in their post-show, because it was, I was embarrassed, embarrassed. Speaking of Juliana Rancic, she was interviewing Deborah Messing from Will and Grace.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
And Deborah Messing trashed the E! Network.
She did.
On the E! Network.
Yep.
Talking to Juliana Rancic. Talking about that Deborah Messing was saying how she's shocked that the E! Network doesn't pay their female reporters and anchors as much as they do their male anchors and reporters.
And one of their female reporters went to the head of the president of the company after the Harvey Weinstein thing broke and said, I want to be paid as much as, I don't even know the guy's name.
Let's be where the story
came
from.
And he said no, and she was
fired.
Let go.
Yeah. She was fired as a result of that. Yep. Deborah Messing brought it up on E, which, you know, I love a good awkward moment.
Yeah. And Juliana right in the middle of it. All right, buddy. Thanks for all that.
See ya.
See ya. And big story next, 720 WGN.
Ditka. Well, it's coming right now, right for us at 22,000 miles an hour.
Ditka.
Not a soul on earth can hide from
it. The Steve Cochran Show now welcomes Mike Ditka.
I'm happy for Steve, and I told him I'm proud of him. I tell you what.
The best Bears conversation is right now on 720 WGN.
The coach at 845. Welcome, Coach. Happy Monday. I don't know how much of many of the games you saw this weekend, but it was a weird mix.
I watched the ball.
Coach, we got you?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are.
What kind of music playing?
The guitarist was a little jumpy today. So anyway, the mix of games this weekend, a little bit odd, but the thing that the Chiefs' second half collapse, man, that was remarkable.
Yeah, that was very it was surprising. But, you know, they lost to a pretty darn good football team. You know, I watch the Saints. The Saints are maybe the best team I've seen, I'll be honest with you.
Is that right?
You can only say that, but, I mean, the Patriots are great. I mean, there's no question about it. But Jacksonville is a good football team. They do a lot of things well. They have the ability to run the ball. Defense is pretty solid. Everybody talks about Bortles at quarterback, but he's not a bad quarterback. So when you look at, you know, I the team that impressed me the most are the New Orleans Saints.
What did you think of the Falcons? Did you see much of that game?
Yeah, that's a good team. That's going to be, you know, I just think that there's some missing pieces there. I don't think they run the ball well enough, and I'm not sure about their defense, I'll be honest with you. Got a great quarterback, got great receivers, but, I just like the Saints.
And they got a great kicker, and you know how much Coach loves the kickers.
Yes, yeah, we do know that.
But I don't even talk to kickers.
I'm with you on the Saints.
Except Butthead, Kevin Butler.
That's it.
I'm with you on the Saints, but, you know, you look at them, and they played the Vikings in that first Monday night game of the year up in Minnesota, and Minnesota pounded them pretty good, but those are two different teams. Now, I think Minnesota's really good, too. But that was with Bradford at quarterback for the Vikings. That was when New Orleans was trying to run the ball with Adrian Peterson, and it wasn't quite working out. And, Coach, how much better can teams get over the course of those 16 games? And have you seen that with the Saints?
Well, it was the Saints, especially in the running game. Mm-hmm. I mean, this Al Kamara guy, he is good. But that line blocks for them. I mean, you got to understand, and you can't load up the box on them because of Breeze. Breeze will pick you apart. I mean, I don't know who his receivers are. They're all different guys. But he hits all of them, tight ends, back, wide receivers. It doesn't matter. Breeze is probably one of the most accurate passers in the league. So when you look at what they're doing, and they know, you say, well, the Saints were always just throw the ball. No, they run the ball well. They play good defense now. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting game. I mean, I like Minnesota a lot. I just think they really got their hands full with the Saints. The Saints are kind of on one of these runs, you know. You get on one of these runs, and it's pretty hard to stop them.
You know, you saw what happened to the Falcons in the Super Bowl this past year, and obviously this wasn't a similar collapse, but to see the Chiefs have the problems that they had after that big first half. Do the players get tight, Coach? I'm sure you've coached in a game like that where the second half just got away from you. Do the guys on the field just get tight after a score or two, and then things just go from bad to worse?
No, I think the other team makes adjustments for one thing, and they start taking away things that you were doing very well. So if you had you're getting the ball to the tight end, they start taking that away from you. Now you got to find an alternate thing to go to. And sometimes teams aren't well to adjust to that on the run. They got a game plan set up for what they want to do, and then when they have to change it, sometimes it just doesn't work out that good.
Falcons-Eagles, one of the premier games next weekend, or is it because the Eagles don't have their quarterback?
It'll be a premier game. The Eagles are a good football team. They really are. They do a lot of things well. I know they don't have the quarterback they want in there, but this kid will be okay. I mean, I don't think it's going to come down to the quarterback. I really don't. I think it's going to come down to a lot of other things in a football game. The ability to play good defense and run the football, I think, going to have a lot to do with it. But, no, you can't count them out just because they're starting quarterbacks out.
Yeah, you kind of proved that a few times along the way.
We went through all that. You play with who you got, and if you got a good game plan and your offensive line and your backs are ready. I mean, everybody's got to buy in, and if it's not all about the quarterback. I understand that he touches the ball on every offensive play. I understand all that, but if you don't have the other ingredients, like quarterbacks are going to get his butt kicked.
Let me jump to the Bears. It's been a week since John Fox was let go. They've interviewed 6 candidates so far. Anybody jump out at you?
I really don't know who they've interviewed. I haven't read the papers because I'm in Florida.
Right.
Well, so I really don't know who they've interviewed.
Shermer at Minnesota. Mainly offensive coordinators. The guy at Kansas City, Matt Nagy.
Well, Pat Shermer's a good coach, and so is Matt Nagy. I mean, it's easy. When you don't have success, the best thing an organization, or the only thing an organization does, is they change coaches. Sometimes you got to look at what you're doing, the whole package.
Sure.
Are we doing everything we can? Are we giving these people, through the draft and through personnel, the best chance to win every week? And and then if you can answer that yes, then it will come down to the coach then. But I just find it hard to say that I'm looking at John Fox and all of a sudden he's a bad coach. No, he's not a bad coach. They had a bad year, that's all.
Let me run through these quickly. Titans, Patriots. Any way the Titans beat the Patriots?
Anything can happen. It's football, but they're going to have to really, to beat the Patriots, they have to control the football. Don't turn it over. Run the football. Keep the Patriots off the field. Because when the Patriots get on the field with Tom Brady, I don't care who their other people around them are, he makes them all better, and they're awfully good on offense, guys. And they're, nobody talks about the Patriots' defense, but watch them play.
Yeah.
They're pretty good.
And the only other game we haven't discussed is Jags-Steelers. Obviously, the Steelers got to be a heavy favorite there, don't they? Or maybe not so much. Jags have had a great year.
Well, the Steelers are the favorite. There's no question about that. But the Jaguars are a good football team. I think the difference comes down. You got the Steelers, you got Roethlisberger, and you got Bortles that's the big difference, really. The Steelers, they should win this football game, yes, no question about it.
All right, two questions for you. Number one, who you like tonight between Georgia and Alabama, and did you ever think we would see a $100 million coach in the NFL?
No. No, I didn't. I was thinking, I was laughing, and I'm so happy for John, and I'm so happy. It proves one thing. They're making a lot of money in football, and John's a good coach, but that's a lot of money. But God bless him. It's terrific, and I hope they have success with him out there. I mean, the Raiders have done some off-the-wall things, but this is not an off-the-wall thing. They hired a good coach, a good man, and that's a lot of money. But I think hopefully they get their money's worth. That's all I can say.
And who you got tonight? Who you got tonight, Coach? Georgia or Alabama?
Well, only because I like the underdog.
Are you going Georgia?
I'll go Georgia.
There you go. All right.
I know it's stupid, but I'll go the other.
No, listen, we were talking to Butthead last week. I said late field goal from the kid you're coaching, and Georgia wins. I like that pick. All right, Coach, all the best.
Thank you, guys. Take care. Have a good day.
See you later.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Helpful texter pointing out that the coach could use the internet if he needs to get the Chicago papers. Hey, he's the coach. If he wants the internet, he knows where it is.
The internet comes to him.
He likes the old school newspaper. That's right. If you can't read the paper by holding it in your hands, you're not going to use the internet. If you have a grandparent, because Coach just turned 80, right? I believe he's 80 now.
It's close, yeah.
So he's 79 if he's a day. Okay. But if you have a grandparent that's or somebody in your life who's 75 or older, who's all over the internet, they are the hippest people at the bingo game. Oh, I'm telling you that
totally.
Right now.
My mom has a Facebook page.
Yeah, well, she's out of control. She needs to be talked to. CLT will join us next, and I got a cool book to talk about next hour on Vinny Hinostroza. Your Blackhawks big winners yesterday, and we're going to Vegas. Lots to talk about. Still to come at 720 WGN.
Learn something new.
Ready to join the conversation live whenever a story changes.
On 720 WGN.
Details on Steva Las Vegas.
Steva Las Vegas.
I never speak in the third person, so why would I start now? And hi to everybody at CLTV. Hope you all had a nice weekend. Hello. 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 You know, if you yell louder, they can hear.
Ow. TV. We're deaf.
Crossing the Vegas line, he'll slap it down the left boards in behind the net, into the far corner. McNabb put it back in behind. Taves fed it out in front. Here's Sod with a shot. He scores! Vinny Hinostroza at the top of the crease. Redirected that one in behind Subban, and the Hawks are on the board.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1. The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
I wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
Vinny Hinostroza is going to join us in just a second. He's the MB Financial Bank Breakfast with a Blackhawk player today. As a matter of fact, you heard that clip from the Vegas game. Vinny had a three-point night on Friday night in that late loss. He's got a nice point streak going. Vinny, how you doing? Vinny,
hey, Steve,
there you are.
Me. I'm good.
All right, good. Nice streak, pal. Got another assist yesterday. How many games in a row with points?
I think it's five.
Five. Think it's five. Come on. Your mom's got to be reminding you all the time. That's five, Vinny.
Yeah.
So congratulations on a good run. Any particular reason you've been hot lately?
I think any time you're able to play with Taser and Sodder, it's nice, and they're such great players, and they're playing really well right now. So I think I'm benefiting from that for sure.
So you're seeing the puck at times with better opportunities than you might not otherwise if those two guys weren't on your line.
Yeah, for sure. I think the three of us have some good chemistry, and they've been playing great, and hopefully we can keep going.
See, Vinny, you're attributing it to playing with them, and there are a lot of people who look at the success that Leiden is having now and say, hey, maybe this is the guy to spark them. Do you see yourself doing so?
I don't think I really think like that. I just try to go out there and use my speed to try to open up space for them and try to find them in open areas. And so far, the three of our games have they've worked out really good together, so I think we're really confident right now, and hopefully we can just keep this little thing going here.
You got to be living the dream, man. Notre Dame and now playing for the hometown Blackhawks. I mean, I safely assume you were a Blackhawk fan when you were a kid?
Yeah, for sure. I grew up watching even some of these guys on my team, so it's definitely surreal coming here and being able to play in my home.
Who was your favorite player when you were a kid?
I think when the Hawks started getting really big, when Taser and Kaner came.
I love that. I love that.
Everyone started watching, so.
I love that. Because you're what, 23?
Yep, 23.
Okay, so 10 years now, which means you were 13. I love the fact that every time I see Taves and Kane, I can tell them that they're the old guys on the team now. That's tremendous.
Yeah, I know, it's weird.
That's tremendous. Dave?
You started the year of Vinny in Rockford, and I know that you obviously wanted to stay with the Blackhawks when the season began, but a lot of observers are pointing to your progress and your improvement as a direct result from the strong start you had this year in Rockford. How much do you think there is to that, and how much did you grow as a player during your time with the IceHogs?
Yeah, I think, obviously at first I didn't want to go down there, but I try to make the best of it every day and try to get better, and the coach and my teammates down there were really great, and I had the ability to play a lot and play a lot of minutes and play in all situations and have the puck a lot. So I think it definitely helped out my game, even though it was definitely hard to do at the beginning of the season, but I think it's definitely going to help my career in the long run.
Well, you're earning ice time now. You know, Q is pretty consistent. Play hard and perform, and you're going to get more ice time, and that's proven to be true, right?
Yeah, I think he's a pretty honest guy, and that's a nice coach to play for. You just want to be able to go out there and play hard.
What's more frightening when Q gets mad, Q or his mustache?
Probably Q.
yeah, because it's one package, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Did you, when you were a little kid, you know how little kids, like we all did this, you know, Dave and I are old enough, we were pretending we were Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Bobby Hall and Stan Mikita. When you were out there, did you pretend you were Taves or Kane more often?
I don't know if I ever pretended I was those guys, but I would always, would growing up try to pretend I was my older cousin that played hockey.
Oh, is that right?
yeah, that's why I started playing. And he was a couple years older than me, and I try to act like him.
Well, let's give him a little pub. What's your older cousin's name?
Brian Sizwalek.
And what's Brian Sizwalek do now?
He works now.
He's got a real job.
Yeah.
Not like you, Mr. Hockey Guy.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so Vinny, end to end, who's the fastest skater on this team, and where would you put yourself?
I don't know. I think we got a lot of fast skaters. I think I think Schmaltz's been flying this year. Mm-hmm. I think Sauter's obviously pretty fast. Kaner is one of the fastest, quickest players with the puck, but
all right, but if we just gave you a stick, no puck, just stick, go end to end, who's gonna beat you?
I don't know, we've never done that, but I think that'd be fun and be a little probably get some wagers going.
Yeah, he's fast. Vinny's fast.
I like it.
No doubt about it. Well, we love the run you guys have been on, and obviously we hope it continues. We've got a bunch of great home games, really, for the rest of the season. That's the reward for all those road games. Good home dates left in January, February, and March, leading up to April and the playoffs and beyond. Every time we do MB Financial Bank's Breakfast with the Blackhawk, Vinny, we get a question from a listener and a fan, and this is from Lauren Plummer. And Lauren Plummer wants to know what the keys are to good chemistry amongst players on the ice. How do you know when you have chemistry with the line you're on, or chemistry in general?
Yeah, I think you have chemistry when you have the puck, and the first place you look at when you look up, your teammates there waiting and ready, and that's what's happening with our line right now. Every time I have the puck and I look up, either Taser or Sauter's there supporting me. So I think we're finding spots for each other, and I think that's when you know you have good chemistry.
By the way, I didn't ask you, but you must see Savvy around quite a bit, one of the great Blackhawk ambassadors and an NHL Hall of Famer, Dennis Savard.
Yeah, see him quite a bit.
Yeah, and have you ever gone on YouTube to see the old Spinorama?
Yeah, my grandma, growing up, would tell me about that. So,
perfect. It's just
I know
perfect.
That pretty well.
I owe you lunch, man. You're giving me so much material. It's Vinny Henestrosa. Love the streak you're on, dude. Stay healthy and keep it going.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate Thanks. You being on. Nice guy, huh?
Very nice. Very nice.
And so let's review. My grandma told me about Dennis Savard, mm-hmm. and the guys I liked when I was a kid
when I was 13
were Taves and Kane.
Yeah.
They were his old man heroes.
Now, that's funny to me, but also that should make you feel good because that guy's in the NHL and he's performing. That's a lot of youth on this team. They really seem to starting, you know, they're starting to gel, Dave. Let me throw a sports cliche in. These boys are starting to gel.
I think so. Schmaltz, he's got a streak going. Vinny, you know, this is...
Vinny's grandmother.
And they got a lot of home games.
Who's probably younger than
they got
me.
They got six of the next seven at home.
Which is great.
Six straight after Ottawa tomorrow night.
That's tremendous.
And they've got that bye week in there, too, so they get a little bit of a break.
What's the word in L.A. on last night's Golden Globes? Nancy O'Dell from Entertainment Tonight, he tried to say. Well, join us in a couple of minutes. It's 9:18. This is 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
This one of great ramps to a song of all time. Ramps, that's cool DJ talk, kids. You remember disc jockeys? They talk until the singing started. We continue, Steve Cochran Show, number 1062. Mike Madigan, once again, has turned down our invitation to show up on the program by not returning our phone calls, not responding. What are you going to do? You hear the crickets, it's the Mike Madigan game. Seventh caller wins. The talented and lovely Nancy O'Dell from Entertainment Tonight joins us. Do you get any sleep at all?
Not a lot. I got about 4 hours last night, which is that's actually a little bit more than I normally get on award ceremonies.
Well, you know, with a morning show like this, we never sleep enough. And four hours to me, that's almost the bare minimum you could get to function, because anything less, you're angry, miserable, and feel just awful. I'm guessing on 4 hours, you can power through the day. Am I right?
You try. You're a little bit tired, and you're like, I can't wait to get home to go to bed. But it is, you can still function.
I liked the show last night. I obviously want to know what you thought. I certainly liked the message, and we loved Oprah. We thought Oprah knocked it out of the park. But what's the feeling in L.A.?
Is that not crazy amazing?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. And let me tell you the scene that was going on backstage, because we do the interviews with the celebrities as they win. They come back and do interviews, and they go back out to their seat. And so there's all these different rooms where people are doing interviews, and there's also food back there, so everybody's eating, and there's monitors where you can watch the show. So everybody's, like, really busy through all the different, you know, other speeches and things going on with the show, and you're doing your own thing. And when Oprah spoke, it was like the, you know, backstage, everything kind of just stopped. It didn't kind of, it did.
Wow.
I mean, all the celebrities came out of the room, so they were doing interviews. They came up to the monitor to watch. Everybody stopped eating. It was just complete silence. Everybody listening to what she had to say.
How fantastic was that?
The power of Oprah is pretty amazing.
All right, so now what's the, you know, I'm seeing this hashtag 2020 trend everywhere. I know Oprah's not going to run for president.
Well, she may. It just drives me nuts. I just want the speech to be held in high esteem for the speech.
Yeah.
And not be talking about something down the road.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. But I think it's just because that speech is so amazing that everybody's like, gosh, Oprah for president. Yeah, and all the celebrities were saying that backstage. It was so funny. It was the first reaction. I was like, what'd you think of Oprah's speech? It was like, Oprah for president. And I think it's the first thing, because she's so presidential, but in a way where you realize, okay, she's amazing, you know, as far as, like, caring for people and compassion. She really wants what's best for everybody. I mean, when Oprah says something, like, her actions reflect her words.
Nancy, I loved the women theme, the empowerment. I think that resonated loud and clear. It was wonderful. I also like, too, and I said this to Stephen, to Dean Richards earlier this morning, I love the fact that they were pairing, and I was careful how I phrased it, young Hollywood and younger Hollywood, like Carol Burnett.
Older
Jennifer.
Stars and younger stars.
Yeah, for so many reasons. You know, I think they were giddy, too. Jennifer Aniston and Emma Stone, each with Carol Burnett and Shirley MacLaine, respectively. Yeah,
and I think it's just showing, you know, the respect that is paid through the generations. And I think also it's realizing that women have had different fights and different parts of the Hollywood business. You know, as Billie Jean King was saying, as she arrived with Emma Stone, it was like her generation to fight for certain rights, and then now it's, you know, Emma Stone's generation, our generation too. Not that I'm the same age as Emma Stone, because I'm certainly not, but it's, the, you know, their time to do the fight and to keep it moving forward. So that was kind of nice representation of that, I thought, when those people come up to stage together. Mm-hmm.
The balance was interesting, too, because it could have gone off in a, this is a man-bashing thing, right. Which I don't believe it ever did. And I also thought Seth Meyers...
I don't think it felt that way either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought Seth Meyers did a really nice job in an impossible situation.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, I would not have want that job. First of all, it's a thankless job anyway. Anytime anybody does those award ceremonies, it always get criticized. And this was such a tough year for him to do it. So I thought he did an amazing job. He did a great fine line. And you know, and a lot of the women, a lot of the actresses, which you'll see tonight on ET, brought that up too. They brought up the fact that, you know, there's so many great men out there. You know, this is not a man-bashing thing. There's so many out there who have been supportive. And there's been men out there who have had a lot of the same issues happen to them that have happened to women. So it's, it was it. And everybody, you know, one of the things that I loved is seeing all the men walk up with the pins that they were wearing, wearing on their clothes, and, you know, all the supportive husbands out there. I mean, Keith Urban with Nicole Kidman, it's just amazing how they support each other's career so much and do it so well. And you'll see her backstage. I talked to her about that. One of the things she said, if you remember on her speech, she said about Keith, like, you know, when I'm cheek to cheek with you, everything, you know, melts away. And I asked her about that backstage, and she started crying again. So
wow.
Really
nice. That's sweet. Look at you making stars cry.
Hey, Nancy, do you see this carrying over to the Oscars, too, and maybe the Grammys wearing black and the Time's Up pin?
Yeah, you know, I could see it still happening, no doubt. I think something will happen. I think each award ceremony may be a little bit different. Like for the SAG Awards, it's going to be all women presenters, so that's their way of taking a stand.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I think it'll just carry through in different ways. You know, there may be still the black scene, because I think one of the things in wearing black was to show unity and solidarity, but also so that that focus would be on the serious subject and not as much on fashion, which happens a lot at the award ceremonies.
Yeah, and honestly, it's well, I don't put you in this bunch, but there's a lot of folks who do entertainment television who don't have the power to ad-lib the same way, and if you take away that fashion piece, it makes the night and the job very difficult. And I think fashion is such a big business thing as well, that I think you may see it changing at the Grammys because of the Grammys. You know those crazy kids with their rock and roll? I think you might see a little different dress code there.
Yeah, they do. Their Grammys is always a little bit of a different dress code. But it is, you know, a lot of what is focused upon is the fashion show. You're right. It was, you know, a different tone last night. It wasn't so focused on. And so, you know, we got to talk more about a serious subject. And you're limited in the amount of time that you have with, you know, they have so many people interviews do, and they got to get up to the show. So you got about, I don't know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes with everybody at the most. Which it's, you know, you got to get a lot of stuff in. So this way, nobody had to get in fashion stuff because it was all just black.
Was anybody else blown away that Barbara Streisand, I forgot, she did win for Yentl, Steve. We were talking in whether it was Princess Tide or Yentl.
1984.
34 years since a female director has won a Globe for Best Director.
It's crazy, right?
Ridiculous.
I know. It's crazy.
Ridiculous.
And there's so many incredible female directors, and I think you're going to be seeing more, because I think that, you know, and now it's where it's like, of course, I mean, to even have to say, of course a female can direct a film. It's just crazy that you would even have to say that. And look at, you know, the director of what, I think it's just so apropos that the director of Wonder Woman was a female and did such an amazing job. I mean, we were talking about, like, the fact that the three top movies at the box office were all female leads.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, when is, you know, that happened before? So each generation has its movement, and this is what's happening now.
There's a balance finally coming.
I wonder if the
there you go,
if the Academy Award
supportive of the women. Yay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh, he totally is. What, yeah. I would be stunned if more females weren't nominated now, especially for director.
So
the Oscar nominations have yet to come out, so
you know, you earn your place, and hopefully, you know, the quality of the work comes through and people won't go, oh, the girl did it. Here's the last thing I'd like to say to you, Nancy, and Andre, and to everybody, because I think it's really important to take forward from it. I have a daughter. I've got this beautiful little grandbaby, you know, who's 2 years old. And I want nothing but the best and fair play and fair pay and a safe environment and all of that. But I also want to say this about men. And Dave, you and I have discussed this a million times.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority are not the minority that have done the terrible things you've been hearing about.
Yep.
And we all know the line. We all know the line. And you know the line, you can't go. And by the way, if you're not familiar with the line, or you're confused about the line, or you're making excuses about the line, you are the problem. And get help before you do something you can't fix. But talk to your sons.
That's true.
Talk to your sons
that's
and teach them the way.
Point.
So we
that's
almost
true.
Lost her there.
That's a very good point.
Almost
that's
lost her there. Had Nancy there. All the way through. Almost lost her there right at the end.
That's very true. That's very well said. And I do think it is a time, and it's true. It's like, you know, everybody's talking about what are they saying to their daughters, but you're right. Everybody needs to be talking about their son to their sons, too, about, you know, the behavior of men in the future, and then also, you know, making them aware of things that can happen, too.
And
that's true, but it's a nice moment. I tell everybody it's a nice moment, that too, that I see with my daughter, who's 10, and, you know, you go to the stores, and there's so many shirts now that say, girl power, you can do whatever you want to do, or achieve your dreams. And it just seems like it's a theme going on everywhere, which is awesome.
Would that be Ashby Grace? Am I remembering that right?
That's right. Very good.
Yeah, last
you
time
know
we
your stuff.
Well, the reason too, that's I'd like great. To take all the Ashby. Credit for it, but Abigail Grace is my granddaughter. She's 2 years old. It's just such a great aww. Middle name, Grace.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Yeah, perfect. Great talking to you. Stay awake for the show.
All right, I appreciate it. Good to talk to you guys, too.
See you later. Nancy O'Dell from Entertainment Tonight. Want to remind you, we are going to take a winner, and obviously someone the winner chooses, to Las Vegas, and a little something we call Steva Las Vegas, when the Blackhawks play the Vegas Golden Knights coming up 13th? The day before Valentine's Day. I'm pulling my own punches. Details on how you can enter before 10.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Express yourself.
941. Steve Cochran Show continues live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Dr. Rachel Hurst has written a book called Why You Eat What You Eat. I'm guessing it's not because we're hungry. Let's go to the good doctor now. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Steve?
Well, I can't believe you put donuts on the cover of your book. I should be upset with you.
Well, it wasn't me, but I thought that I think it's quite eye-catching in any case.
Yeah, but now we want donuts.
Well, maybe that's true. Maybe you also want my book, though. That's the idea.
I always say this, and if I put you on the air to plug your book, it means because I support your book and I believe in your book. And I listen, get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose one. You might eat the other copy. So get yourself two copies wherever books are sold or downloaded. All right. Why you eat what you eat. Not many of us eat because we're hungry. We eat because of what?
Well, we eat because of all the experiences that are affecting us that are in our environment, from the basic sensory things like how something looks, even how something sounds, obviously how it smells and tastes, to all the psychological aspects of our environment that include the outside world, the people we're with, and also our inside world, our mood, our mind, and our brain.
The habits that we have are stunningly routine. And I'll give you a perfect example. I caught myself recently, in the past couple of years, in a realization, so I would have been, 54, that every time I walked in the house, I went to the refrigerator. Not because I was hungry, but I'd go to the refrigerator, have some sort of snack or something. Just cutting out that makes a difference in the day.
Yes. So the idea is to be aware of your behavior and the world around you and how it's affecting you, because it actually not only influences the fact that you're going to eat because you're going to the refrigerator, but even how food tastes and how fast you eat and the effect that it actually has on your body when you eat it. So the idea is to learn all the things that are affecting you and then to take the power back so that you can control food and not have food control you.
Okay, doctor, when will you work out? When, depending on the time you work out, say it's either in the morning or midday or before dinner, will that affect how you eat? So in other words, if I come home, should I work out first because then I won't want to eat, or have a light snack and then rest and then work out?
Well, people are all different, and actually it has a lot to do with our habits. So people who come home after a workout and eat, that's a person who feels like they sort of need to eat after a workout. You can change that, though, by just changing your mentality. And I don't really want to speak too much about the sort of science behind, you know, burning calories and when you should eat, because I'm not really an expert in that so much. But the fact that you have the idea in your mind that you need to eat first or you need to eat after, that's in your mind, and that you can control. So the other thing that's really good about working out, however, is that it actually increases our willpower. So if you work out first, you'll actually be better at resisting the donuts on the cover of my book than if you don't work out at all. So willpower is good to just increase in general, and exercise actually helps that.
We know we have a release of endorphins when we exercise. You write in the book about comfort foods, and there's an endorphin release from comfort foods as well. Is comfort food eating emotional eating?
It is emotional eating, and it's tied to two things. One is, like you just said, the brain chemicals that are released when we're eating comfort foods are actually hitting the pleasure centers of our brain and also making us feel good and soothed. So we get a direct hit from the foods that are high-calorie, sweet, and fatty, and otherwise delicious. They make us feel good. We love them. The other thing about comfort foods is that they're associated to being comforted, and usually for most of us, especially from times in childhood. So when we eat comfort foods, we get sort of the feeling of a warm hug from our parents, and that helps us feel better in times of stress or when we're feeling unhappy, which is often when we go to turn to comfort foods.
What's something good to eat that will fill us up so we don't have to have a
this
huge
book.
Meal? Well, yes.
So nuts are actually, I think, great to eat. This is partially based on science and also partially based on my personal opinion. I actually have a chapter in my book which I talk about the fact that it's really interesting to know that the foods that are most satiating, most filling, there really isn't a good consensus on it, and it actually depends most on what you're familiar with. We think the foods that we eat regularly are actually more filling than foods that we eat very occasionally, so that's one good thing to know about in general. But nuts are foods that are high in fat, and they're also high fiber. Fat makes us feel full, so actually it's better to eat full-fat yogurt than the low-fat version because it's more filling, and it's also more pleasurable on your tongue. But nuts are good from just a general, if I had to pick a food that I was going to say would be just satiating off the top. The most recent research does support that, and my personal opinion is that nuts are quite satiating and also very good for you.
You write in the book about eye candy.
And yes.
It can involve candy, but basically the point is if you can see something, it can trigger you to eat something. Chocolate is my kryptonite, doctor. And we have chocolate available here all the time. That's another one of those things where you literally have to stop yourself and go, do I want this? Do I need this? Should I have this? You got to go through steps, right?
Absolutely. And one of the ways that you could, the simplest thing you can probably do to resist it is just move the chocolate a little further away. So even if it's just across the room and you have to get up from your desk to go get it, you're less likely to eat it than if it's sitting right in front of you at arm's reach.
Move it three offices away, Steve, not two.
What about a candy jar that also is a stun gun? Something like that, maybe.
Yeah. If it electrocuted you, that would probably work as well.
Right. What about chocolate with nuts?
That would be, actually, dark chocolate is good for you. And the whole idea that I want to sort of present in a way is that moderation and variation are kind of the keys to eating. You can eat everything that you want, but just not too much of it. And you want to have a varied diet. So you don't want to just eat chocolate or just eat chicken wings. You want to eat a combination of different kinds of foods, and that's the most healthy way to consume.
The voice you heard was Dave Ennett, our sports director and a legend here in Chicago. He also is in terrific shape, despite the fact that he's 147 years old. But Dave eats kale. He eats greens. He eats quinoa.
He's the best eater.
Unbelievably
on the show.
Healthy. Is that something emotionally tied to Dave? What's wrong with Dave? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, Dave is a great example and a great role model. And the thing is that we develop our eating habits literally through just what we're familiar with. And a lot of times we're not very willing to sort of change things up or move to a healthier diet. And it takes a real mental shift to change our diet from one that's high in processed foods to one that's high in unprocessed foods and greens and so forth, and which is a lot healthier. But you can do that just by changing your mindset. So it's different people are less willing to change their mindset, so that's about an aspect of personality. But if you can just sort of look at food differently, and maybe even just taking the baby step of, you know, I need to just expand my food horizon, and I'm just going to bring kale or other vegetables into it that I don't normally eat, and start off just by adding new foods, and maybe you'll find that you can replace some of the old foods with the new foods and take it from there.
But doctor, if you eat what you know, it sounds like what you're saying is Dave's parents deprived him of junk food.
Well, he may actually have had a little bit less junk food in his childhood than some other people, but it's also the case that his desire for health and his mental set about eating is really what's driving him to consume, and we can all change that.
Dave, congratulations once again.
Thank you.
You're a great eater and you're really healthy.
Well,
why don't you go gnaw on some lawn?
No, I was going to ask about it because I will eat nuts, but I try to avoid the salted ones. I mean, that's the right choice, right?
Isn't the salt the point?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to make a note of it.
Well, actually, you know, so salt is good, again, in moderation. So, again, my mantra of moderation. And actually, from the point of view of health, it's been shown that people who eat the lowest amount of salt in their diet, actually what's really in the range of what the FDA tends to recommend, and the people who eat the most salt are actually both less healthy than people who have a moderate amount of salt, who's actually consuming somewhat more than the recommended amount, but not too much more. So another thing that one should bear in mind is that medical and nutritional advice changes with the wind, and you need to take it with a grain of salt. So everything with respect to like the exact amounts and the numbers and that sort of thing isn't really so much the point. It's kind of common sense. And so you can have some salt, but not too much salt, and it also depends on your own physical state. So if you know that a doctor's told you you need to avoid salt because of a medical condition, then obviously you want to do that. But just from a pure health perspective, a little salt is actually good.
It's Dr. Rachel Herz, Why You Eat What You Eat. I'll let you go on this, and I'm sure you cover it in the book, but I haven't gotten through the book yet. And again, get two copies. You're careless, you'll eat the first one. Should you restrict yourself or absolutely forbid yourself from eating something you love?
No, is the short answer. So restricting yourself, and actually all diets in general that are, especially the ones that are very sort of restrictive on what you want to consume, backfire. And people often gain more weight after going on a diet than they weighed before the diet in the first place. And the idea is that you just want to understand what's going into your relationship with food, why you're choosing that food, think about it, and then move ahead accordingly. But you do not want to restrict yourself other than for a health condition where you've been warned you need to avoid a certain food. Sure. You don't want to restrict yourself from things that you love. You want to give yourself things that you love, but just not too much of it.
847, helpful texter. You know, I could move chocolate downstairs and put it in the garage. I'd still find it.
Well, that's good. You're very highly motivated. Maybe you can be very highly motivated for kale, too, one day.
Oh, please. Why you eat what you eat, really. I mean, you can take all your diet books, stack them up in the corner, kids, because if you get to the bottom of this, you may have cracked the code. Doctor, thank you for the work you do, and thank you for the book.
Thank you very much for having me.
Have a good day. Dr. Rachel Herz, Why You Eat What You Eat.
In all fairness, Dave can't gnaw on the lawn. I mean, it's January.
What
the
do you think
he hasn't even grown in yet.
Oh, yeah.
You got to wait for Thursday when those temperatures...
50, Dave, on Thursday. You can start eating at the median.
I don't mind it with a little ice.
It's 9:52. Bill and Wendy coming up. 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's your thing. Do what you
want to
do.
Sandberg, join me in the studio here for a second.
I can't tell you who to talk to.
9:56. You know what I want to play for you before we run out of time?
What you want to do.
Stephen Miller. My words, not yours. Is this annoying little punk who showed up on CNN yesterday with Jake Tapper. Wouldn't answer any questions. Trash CNN. And finally, Tapper threw him off the show. Listen.
The reason why I want to talk about the president's experiences, what I've seen with him traveling to meet dozens of foreign leaders, with his incredible work.
Okay, you're not answering the questions.
No,
I understand.
You have 24 hours a day of anti-Trump material,
you're
not going to give 3 minutes for the American people
I get
to hear
it.
The real experience of Donald Trump.
There's one viewer that you care about right now, and you're being obsequious.
No,
you're being a factotum in order to please him, okay?
No.
And I think I've wasted enough of my viewers' time.
You know who
Thank
I care
Stephen.
About?
As Republicans,
hey, Jake,
lawmakers call for Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign, in a major reversal, Democrats are now coming to his defense. What changed?
They literally had to throw him off the show.
Right. Security escorted
and
him
then
out.
And then, that's because he wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
He wouldn't leave the studios of CNN, and they had to call security to have him removed. It's just inexplicable. all of this. It's why it matters. I asked Sandberg to come in here to explain Steve of Las Vegas one more time before we leave. All right, how do people enter for a trip to Vegas to hang out with us?
They can go to WGNradio.com, the contests page, and you can just upload a photo of you in your Hawks gear and you and
of me?
No, the individual. The
oh, because they're trying to prove their fandom.
Yes. And so whether you've got one of those really cool basements that's all decked out in hockey stuff, or if you've got, you know, Blackhawks sheets, maybe a picture of you in bed.
Your man cave, your woman cave.
You at the game, your baby all covered in
And it doesn't
gear.
Have to be a husband and wife.
No.
It doesn't have to be a boyfriend and girlfriend.
No.
Could be any two. Could be your
siblings.
Pal. Could be your girlfriend.
Yeah,
could
besties.
Be whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your besties.
And so you upload the photo, and then some judges are going to decide who the biggest fan is, and then you're going to get to go to Las Vegas, and you're going to get to go to the Blackhawks Vegas Knights game on the 13th.
Right, and we'll do a couple of shows out there, and one of them involves me in a cocktail dress.
Just hello.
I do believe, actually, I heard it was pitched that you were going to wear a Elvis jumpsuit.
Well, that's a hot
what our boss Stephanie said.
It's a, either way, either way, it's a win for the viewer. all right, back with, and how do we enter again?
WGNradio.com/contest.
Okay, WGNradio.com/contest. Upload those photos.
And if we like your photo, you won't be picked till later, but we might put you on the air in the meantime to talk about how much you're a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. What you said. Minute before 10, Wendy's back in studio. Great to see her, and she has a new friend. Stand by for that. It's the Hawks Express, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. How about that win yesterday?
From the Oilers, that is a shot. They score! It's Nick Schmaltz! Schmaltz got hold of a loose puck as it looked like Hartman was all tied up with an Oiler defender. Hartman didn't see the puck at his feet, but Schmaltz did. Pulled it in front and put a backhander past Talbot. It's 1-0 Hawks. He tried to fit it in front. He scores! That one hit a pad of one of the Oilers' cleft bomb, I believe, and then hit Talbot and rolled through his equipment and over the goal line. The Hawks now lead 2-0. The Cat strikes again. Through center ice, breaks it over the Oilers line, right wing to Taze, right circle, moving to the net, he scores with a backhand! On a delayed penalty, Jonathan Taze one-handed it toward the Oilers net. It went inside the Oilers net with 9 seconds left to go in the period. The Hawks lead 3-1. Taze battling, leaves it for Hinostroza. He fed it up the slot, Osterley fires, he scores! Ha-ha! Jordan Osterley! He's got 3 career goals, and 2 of them are against his old team, the Edmonton Oilers. He makes it 4-1 Hawks with about half a period left to play here in the third. The Hawks will beat the Edmonton Oilers 4-1 here today at the United Center and win the season series with a record of 2-0-1 against the Edmonton Oilers.
Minute after 10, right on time as always. Welcome back, Wendy. You look fabulous.
Thank you. It is so nice to be back in studio.
Right.
Love seeing
with your
you.
Fancy new knee and your cool scar.
Yeah, I know. I like showing it off.
You do.
It looks cool.
Bill is not here for my return, so Brian Noonan is here in his place.
Brian, nice to see you.
It's nice to see you guys. Good morning.
What'd you do with the old knee?
It's in the Radio Broadcast Museum. Yeah.
Wow.
I may get both of my knees done this year.
That's
year.
Not fun.
I'm going to give them away on the air.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool. Huh? Right. Very nice biohazard gift.
Right. Seventh caller, you get my knee?
Wow.
You know, it's fitting because when you walk into the Broadcast Museum, there's Oprah's door, you know, the set, and Wendy's knee. Yeah. So it's kind of fitting. Hashtag Snyder VP 2020.
Oh, if Oprah's president, I'll do it.
Oh, there you go.
And why isn't she president? God, I love her.
She's a talk show host,
right?
There's a whole thing. You have to go through a reality show first. There's a whole primary process. Great seeing you. And you're on.
All right. Well, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.